Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, leave it in the ring. Another edition of Leaving the Ring. I'm your host, Dave Duenas, with my co-host, Gabriel Montoya, and the man behind the switchboard, our producer, David Chan. This is My Boxing Official Radio Show. And, this Friday Night Fights, man, they've been putting it together. They've been making things happen for us boxing heads who are waiting for the big fights to come back up. You know, disappointing thing is Kelly Pavlik pulled out of his upcoming Showtime fight due to some monies and other things. He's tired of being a puppet. Had a good read on Max Boxing. And I'm pretty sure my co-host, who's a feature writer, one of the better writers out of Max Boxing. Not better writers, but one of the better writers. You know what I mean? Let's rub it in. One of the better writers of Max Boxing, you know. And bar none, there's none guys that match up to Gable here, man, when it comes to investigating. Because, I gotta tell you the truth, man. You know, when it comes to Gable interviewing or asking questions, he can get some things pulled out of the hat. He's done it out of my hat. You know, sometimes I don't even want to talk to the guy, but he can hypnotize you in a certain way just to get things out of you, man. But what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man.
Are the balls sweaty the way you were tweeting them yesterday?
Wow.
You know, I didn't know.
Fisher was hilarious.
I heard it was pretty hot out there, but I didn't know it was that hot until you put that out on Twitter that, you know, you're out of the sun and the balls are sweaty and you're heading back home to get some water.
I'm standing in line. You know, we're at the Alvera Street, a little what the hell is it called? It's a little enclosed area, like gazebo, you know.
Uh-huh.
They had the mariachis out there, and Eric Morales and Jesse Vargas and Josecito Lopez, who we'll have on later. And they're doing the interviews, and Morales, you know, obviously takes up a lot of media time. And they sent all the cameras first, and, you know, they're doing a 30-second spot on TV, but each of these guys does a 10-minute interview. It's like all Spanish-language stuff, so they're just, you know, they love the guy. And I come around after interviewing Lopez and Vargas, and the line is still deep, and Doug Fisher's standing in the back, the last camera guy in line with Ring TV, you know, who's owned by, you know, Golden Boy. And he looks at me and says that. He's like, anybody that thinks that we get special treatment, you know, because we're owned by Golden Boy, it's my sweaty balls right now. Pretty fucking funny. He looked at me and said, "You can tweet that, by the way."
That is great. That is great, man. Well, you know, we got a good panel of guests that are going to be on Leaving the Ring, from Josecito Lopez, who's got a showdown on September 10th on the Star Power Golden Boy card, Victor Ortiz versus Floyd Mayweather. Man, that card is turning out to be a pretty stacked and interesting and one of the better cards of this whole year, all put together. You know, he's going to be facing Jesse Vargas, who's going to be on as well. Hopefully we can get Eric Morales on the show. We're being told that he's going to be able to get on the show. And then a little later, we're going to be getting the prospect, one of the top Golden Boy prospects, Ricky Lopez, and hopefully his cousin Mike Alvarado, who should be coming on. If you want to call in right now into the show, hey, look, we're getting calls already. If you want to call in right now into the show and speak to us here on Leaving in the Ring, you sure can. Number is 347-215-7598. Be sure to check out the press conference that we did cover yesterday between Jesse Vargas, Josecito Lopez, and Eric Morales, who's going to be facing Lucas Matisse, which I think is a great, great fight for Eric Morales. I like what he said. He said, listen, I am crazy at what I do, and this is what I do. Absolutely, man. There's no question about it that the guy has heart. The guy does have, you know, tons and tons of balls to be getting in there with another world-class big puncher, you know. And if we remember, everybody wrote him off in that first fight when it was announced that he was going to be facing Chino Marcos Medina, who's going to be facing Robert the Ghost Guerrero in San Jose HB Pavilion. We wrote him off. We said that he was crazy. We said, like, if you can't take a Manny Pacquiao hit, you're not going to be able to take a big hit from 104-pound world beater. Let me say world beater, Madonna. Now he's getting in with another Argentinian guy that's not as slow, not as robotic. Matisse is a fairly, very good movable, but does throw wide shots, but the guy is just dangerous, and he can hit. He rocked Zab Judah. He gave Devon Alexander all he can handle. And in both of those fights, a lot of fight fans, including myself, and I think Gabriel Montoya as well, we felt we won that fight. So going in with Eric Morales, man, is just a – God, you know what? Regardless of Eric wins or loses, man, that's just going to be a great, great fight overall. But I want to talk about some other
140. I can't wait.
I know.
I can't wait for that fight. You know, he's like – Matisse is like a little bit better than Maidana. He's like Maidana 3.0. You know, he's a little bit faster. He can box a little bit better. I think he's possibly a little tougher, but Maidana's a pretty tough bastard. That Ortiz fight, you know, that we're only going to find that out when they fight each other, which would be an awesome fight. I think Morales may have bitten off more than he can chew. You know, he's been in the gym like 2 weeks, still a little pudgy around the middle, but I think he's just always going to look kind of weird. He even had kind of a weird body when he was in his prime. Kind of skinny, you know, and not much musculature to him. Looked like he just sweat off, like, everything, all his muscle. So, you know, I can't really judge him by his body, but like, he already had, like, a little bit of a black eye. But you never know. You know, I don't know if the little bit of inches, the little things that he did, like kind of laying back on the ropes and dodging this way and that way, just kind of subtly, I wonder if that's going to work with Matisse, who's a little bit better boxer. It would certainly work with Maidana, who's not a very good boxer at all, just a good puncher. Dude, I can't wait for that fight. It just kind of upped the ante for September 17th.
Yeah, you know, you're right. I mean, the thing about Maidana is that Eric Morales was able to get away with. He was able to really see the punches that were coming towards him. I mean, you know, Madonna's not the fastest guy in the world. I mean, he's definitely a guy that you could really sit there and see whatever's coming towards you. You know what I mean? And you could dodge him as quick as they're coming towards you. So with Matisse, I don't know if he's going to be able to do those things he was able to do. You know, sit back, kind of arch down a little bit, wait for the guy to lead with a punch and then counter. We're looking at a completely different Argentinian beast, man, when he's going to be stepping in the ring with him.
Hey, Jesse Vargas's people just texted me, and they said, you better get him now because he's going to get on a plane soon. So I'm going to call him now, and I'll bring him in. I'll be right back. A little sooner than we thought.
Okay, great, bro. I'm being told right now. I'm getting all kind of calls, all over the place here. We got Ricky Lopez on hold and all that, but we're gonna be patching him in right now. So Ricky, stay on hold for a minute because CRPR was telling us you were supposed to be in at 7:30. We didn't know we were gonna have you in this early. But stay on hold. As soon as we get Jesse Vargas out of the way, we'll patch you in, brother, and then I'll speak to you, man. I've been looking forward to talk to you for a minute. Been watching you fight for some time now, man. So I'm really really excited about having him on. So Ricky, please don't hang up. Everybody else, man, I'm putting in some calls right now. You're on hold. Please stay on hold while we get Jesse Vargas on with us to talk about that fight that it's going to be having with Josecito Lopez. Josecito Lopez, if you don't know about him, man, he's the guy that upset it. Not upset it. You know, I picked him to beat Mike Dallas. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm here with junior welterweight contender Jesse Vargas, who's on a press tour right now. I'm not sure where he's heading off to in his plane to announce the fight with Josecito Lopez. Welcome to the show. What's up, Jesse? How you doing, man?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me again.
Hey, what's up, brother? How you doing, man?
Hey, pretty good, man. Just getting all these things worked out, you know, this press conference and all that. You know, it's a very nice experience that I'm going through, so very happy to be here.
Tell us a little bit about that experience. I mean, because the casual fans don't know about this. I mean, I got to tell you, man, kudos for this fight, for both of you guys signing on for this fight, because this is an exciting fight. This is definitely – these are the kind of fights that boxing heads like myself and Gable and the rest of the people that listen to Leaving the Ring, where we get all worked up about and we get excited about, man, because – two guys in the prime, they're going to go at it, put it all on the line. And what better way to have an explosion but on a pay-per-view card for the casual fans that don't know, you know, that are kind of learning how to really look at the science of the game, get a chance to really see a lot of science with two young guys just mixing it up.
Of course, it's a great opportunity that we're being presented. And I think we'll take advantage of it. And you know, the fans will get a great fight out of it. And like you said, you know, in such a big stage, being so young and opening the pay-per-view card, it's an honor.
So when you hear Josecito Lopez say, you know, this is a fight that really determines who's going to survive. What do you think about that? Is this a fight of two fighters at the end who survives out of it, or do you think that you're the one that is going to be victorious?
I think it's a fight that yes, I agree somewhat. It's a fight that will open the doors for bigger and better opportunities and bigger and better things. Now, you know, I'm working hard. I'm sure he is. But I'm coming to win, you know, and that's the bottom line. So, and one thing that I do agree with him is that this will open the door to many things in the future.
Good. Gabriel?
What about, what said that you were ready for this kind of guy? Because, you know, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. You've had the prospect fights. You've kind of had the aging veteran fight. You've passed those tests. Was it just perfect timing now to take on somebody like Josecito, who's kind of in his prime?
I feel it's the perfect timing. I mean, like I say, I always give Josecito credit because he is a very good fighter, you know. But, I mean, as I said before, I feel that I'm, you know, a better fighter. So, I mean, talk is cheap. I would just have to present it and show everyone come September 17th.
Why don't you trash talk more?
I mean, I don't really like to trash talk, you know. I just, you know, just say it how it is, and you know, respect
right.
him as a fighter, you know, respect him as a fighter, and you know, I do expect a great fight coming from him. You know, I know he shows up at each event, each fight, to fight, so
yeah.
You know, expect fireworks September 17th.
I was curious. Like I was watching you guys. You know, when you're at the podium there in L.A. One guy's talking, the other guy's talking, and each fighter's kind of looking at the other guy. What are you thinking at that point? Are you already sizing him up? Are you listening to his words for any sort of fuel for your training? What's going through your mind?
You know what? As he was talking, it seems like he's a very respectful. It seems like he's a gentleman. Yeah, I mean, we both respect each other. I feel, and we know that it isn't going to be an easy fight. I think we both do. And I think we look at each other, and we're ready to go.
Yeah, there's really no animosity needed for this fight. I mean, with the styles, you guys both are going to come forward. Do you think the difference is going to be who boxes just good enough and who has a little bit better defense? Because you both are aggressive guys, and you can be hit a little bit. Although I haven't
yes,
really seen you hit a hell of a lot.
Yeah, well, I guess it's just going to come down to who has the better movement. Because, I mean, the smallest movements will make a difference in this fight. You know, the quickest, the fastest, and the right movements will make a difference. And it will be noticed, most definitely. And, you know, I have Robert Arcasar on my side now. And we have plenty of time to prepare for this fight. And all those movements are coming along in place, you know. All the movements that I'm talking about, the speed, everything we're working on is just, you know, it's perfect just for this fight.
What
you
was the reason?
Oh, go ahead.
My question is this: What was the reason to trade trainers? I mean, to get Robert Alcazar in the mix, and is he the sole head trainer? Or are you still getting advice by Roger or anything?
Me and Roger get along just well. Robert Alcazar is the main trainer. He is the trainer, and. You know, the reason that I changed it, that I made the change was just some personal reasons that I felt that I had to make the change. It wasn't an easy decision to do, but, you know, it was something that I felt that I had to make. Me and Roger left on good terms. You know, we don't have a bond with each other. We just still get along just well. And, you know, I'm with Robert now, and I'm feeling great. And I felt that I made a right move and going with Robert Alcazar.
Now, that's like a really big change of trainers. I mean, one guy is defense, the other guy is a guy that kind of, what I've seen in the past, yeah, a combination of different things here, you know. I mean, was it a big turnaround for yourself? I mean, did he change a lot of what you were doing, or does he try to keep the style that you had before and work with it?
I think we both adjust to each other. You know, of course, you know, he's a new trainer, and I have to change certain things that Robert wants me to change. But also, I think he is, you know, training me at my style, but into his style.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I kind of explained myself there. You know, we're just mixing it in each other with each other, and you know, I'm learning a lot, and which I feel that I will keep learning along my career, and you know, working towards perfection, and hopefully we show a big difference in this upcoming fight.
You talked about, you know, he came on, what, 2 weeks before your last fight, and you felt like already a difference. You said that you'd added speed. How do you mean that? Is it like taking, not loading up on your punches as much, and so you gain a little bit of speed that way, or getting, you know, moving on your toes a little bit different ways? How do you gain speed?
Speed, I guess everything, every move that I make now is a lot faster. It could be my arms or legs, you know. And as I said before, I changed it. It was noticed in my past fight, July 8th versus Estrada.
Yeah.
You know, I was very quick. I was very aware of everything. And you know, we're looking forward to showing even a better performance with Josecito.
Do you think now it's not a matter of even changing out of that? I don't even know how you would describe it.
Because I mean, my style. I have my own style.
Yeah.
You know, and Robert is working me. Like I said before, in between his style and my style, we're working together, and we're very comfortable with each other, even though we haven't had that long together, but we get along just well in the gym. I share the same ideas, you know, and I'm very open-minded. As soon as he teaches me something, I try to learn it on the spot. And I'm a very quick learner, so everything's coming along quick.
So it seems like a little bit the difference, like what you're saying, reacting quicker. It's almost the difference between, like, seeing something and then going and doing it, as opposed to waiting for something to happen and then reacting. That's what I kind of saw in your last fight. You were more aggressive, and you got it done quick, you know?
Well, I guess, you know, as you said, I react faster, and I come back as soon as, I guess my reaction is just, everything's just quicker, you know, everything's just faster, quicker, and alert, you know. As soon as I make you miss a punch, I'll come back with something, you know, in which before I felt that, you know, I might move and I'll take my time more, and I was more patient. Now, I guess my reaction is just real quick, you know, and that's just from having Robert on my side.
How are you feeling coming into this fight?
That's where the speed comes in, you know, and the reaction and the speed in each counterpunch as well. I'm sorry, what was that, Gabe?
I was asking, coming into this fight, how do you feel? Do you feel like you're the underdog in this fight, or do you feel he's the underdog?
You know what? I truly believe everyone expects a great fight.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I'm looking at,
yeah,
I think he might be the underdog. I mean, you can't really compare too much, but you know, everyone expects a great fight. That's for sure. And can't really say underdog, but I guess from what I see, I guess a lot of people and a lot of opinions, they're figuring him as the underdog.
Now, because you get a guy, I mean, Josecito Lopez is what you see is what you get. He's a pretty big guy, come forward, throws tons and tons of shots, and continuously puts the pressure on you. You know, and if you look back at the fights like with Mike Dallas, Mike was always two steps behind and trying to counter him or try to get him off. You know, when you see something like that, do you play in his fight, which means make it a war, go forward, and both throw a lot of shots, or do you strategically break it down and try to make him fall in the traps and maybe try to knock him out?
Yes. Well, speaking of Michael Dallas, he's a good fighter, but I really don't compare myself anywhere near him. You know, we're just two different fighters. You know, now Josecito, about him coming to fight, it doesn't matter if he wants to fight, if he wants to box. You know, whatever he wants to do, we'll be ready for him, and I could fight as well, you know, and I'm a big puncher myself. So, if he wants to come in and bang, you know, we'll give it to him. Now, whatever situation presents itself, we would always look for the smartest decision in the fight. But fortunately for me, I have the options of either boxing, fighting, or even, you know, just moving around and counterpunching now that I have Robert. So we have a couple of options, and we're going to surprise Josecito come September 17th.
There we go. Gabe,
I can't wait, dude. Yeah, no, I can't wait. That's the fight that I was like, done. I'm going to Vegas. That's it. You know,
yeah.
It's a can't-miss action fight, dude. I bet you're glad to be done with the kind of this leg of the promotional thing and get back to training, right?
Yes, yes. I mean, it was 2 days off, but, I mean, we knew this was going to happen, so, you know, we prepared for it, you know, beforehand. So, you know, we're just going to come back tomorrow and have another great day of training. And I'm very excited for this fight. I want everybody to know. I know that everyone will see fireworks, not just my fight. I mean, there's going to be also a couple other good fights in the same show.
Well, dude, man. Yeah, this card is stacked. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's an action-packed show full with good fights. You know, and it's a pleasure to be alongside of Eric Morales and Floyd Mayweather, you know, in the biggest show possible. I mean, and one of the greatest shows ever made, you know, so happy to tag along.
Did you get to hang out with Morales at all or talk to him while you were on this, or was he, like, traveling in his own limo and doing his own thing?
You know what? Yeah, I did get to travel with him. He's a very nice guy. He's funny. That surprised me. He has a very good sense of humor. And yeah, he also gave me some positive advice, you know, and how to deal with this sport, and just positive advice, you know. And I had a good time, and you know, I thank Morales for the advice he gave me. I mean, he's such a great fighter. He's a legend, you know. When I was 10 years old, I was looking up to him, you know, and now just to be talking to him is just a great honor.
Yeah, I bet, man. You know, and even to see him still back into it, you know, and being a factor is that's a great, you know, thing in its own right, you know. And then you got to sit across and watch this guy, and you're watching him when you're a kid, and you look at him and you're like, God, this guy's still a threat at 140. That's got to just be crazy,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, I mean, still just fought Maidana when everybody was writing him off, and he comes in and, I mean, gives a spectacular fight. You know, all the fans, I was there, all the fans there had a great time. I mean, I loved the fight. It was a very close decision. Many thought he won, you know, including myself, you know. Now he's against Lucas Matisse, which is a similar style, maybe a little cleaner, but
right.
It's a great fight. I mean, what is he, 34 years old, and he's still giving great fights. So
I thought Maidana outpointed him, but, like, Morales won the night, you know?
Right,
like,
right.
He won the fight in that
sense.
Like, we all just kind of went, oh, dude, you know, I didn't think he had a chance. And he just comes out one-eyed, puts on a great performance again. So, hopefully you'll have both of your eyes in this fight, and you won't have to gut it out. It'll still be a great fight, man. I thank you for coming through. David, did you have more?
You know, man, Jesse, hey, brother, I'm just, we're rooting for, you think, this is the crazy thing, Jesse, is that I like both of you guys. I'm a fan of both of you guys, but, you know, I got to root for both of you guys.
fine, you know, I understand that. Just root for a great fight. I mean, stay neutral if you have some.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? I'm going to also, you guys definitely sold it for me to head out to Vegas, because I wasn't going to head out there. I was going to send our writer, Sal, and he's still going, but I'm going to go. But I think I'm just going to go as a fan, man, so that, because your guys' fight, I definitely want to see live. I know it's going to be some fireworks, man, and I want to be able to, you know, be rooting and spilling Tecate on my shirt, you know, when I'm jumping up and down when you guys are throwing blows, man. Hey, Vargas, hey, thank you again, bro. It's always a pleasure when we have you on, man, and can't wait to see the fight, and hopefully whoever's victorious comes back on leaving the ring, regardless if you win or not. I think you're going to win a lot of fight fans over, casual fans mostly, that haven't had a chance to see neither one of you guys get in the ring and mix it up.
All right, well, thank you, and thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure. And, yeah, thank you.
All right, man. Oh, we'll catch up with you. Have a safe flight.
All right, nice talking to you.
There you go, man. You take care. You know, I'm really pumped up about that fight. I got to tell you, I have some guys that are hitting me up saying, look, they got Vargas, Jesse Vargas taking this fight. Then I got some guys coming in with Josecito Lopez. I got to really seriously tell you, I'm sitting there and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, you know what? Both of these guys have the traits to really be victorious in this fight. It's who really holds to their weight, who really, you know, kind of buries their feet in the ground and decides to just take control of that fight when the bell rings. It's, to me, this is just a fight of hearts. Who's going to bring the bigger... You know what I mean?
I think, like you said, like who makes the right movements, you know? And I think that means feet and hands, you know, everything, head movement. The right adjustments throughout the fight, who gets there a little quicker, a little sharper. Like Antion and Rios, you know, Antion was just a little bit wider. You know, he's also a lot older, but...
Right.
Just a little bit wider, and Rios was nice and compact, and it's going to be those kind of inches that's going to make the difference in this fight. I think experience is key, too, you know. I lean toward Josecito in this just because of that. He's been battle-tested but against
that's
guys that he wasn't quite supposed to beat,
right.
and he's won.
You know, and
he hasn't had that yet.
And the thing, too, is that people always look at Josecito because he doesn't have, you know, this KO ratio on his fight record. But they look at him, well, this guy's not a big puncher. But he's a valiant puncher, but he's a big 140-pounder. I mean, we had a chance to see him out there at the Henry Ramirez and at the training camp. And I sat across from him watching, and I'm like, wow, this guy's a pretty big dude. And that's why when he opposes himself in that volume punching and coming forward, he's successful because I think a lot of people underrate the size that he brings, you know. And he's able to absorb punishment and continue coming forward.
Well, the difference was, like, yesterday, they probably looked about the same size.
Right.
I thought Jesse looked a little softer in the face, but I've never really hung out with him between fights. So he made us always – that's just how he looks. You know, fighters – when they melt down and get in shape, they look different. Josecito looked in good shape and was apparently like 154. And he's a little bit older. He just looks like a guy that is filled out a little more, has a little more of the man strength that they always talk about. And Jesse's kind of, not a kid, but definitely young. And I wonder if that's going to be a difference, just the strength between the two guys when they, you know, they're going to meet at center ring and get into a phone booth at some point. And is it going to be Josecito pushing him back? Or, you know, does Jesse have the stuff? This is his prove-it fight. If he can beat this guy, I'm pretty sold on Jesse Vargas. You know, because he's going to be there, like, every second of that fight.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know, and the thing, too, about this is the thing, too, I like. Jesse Vargas is a big guy himself. You know, he's a come-forward guy, big puncher. See, that's the thing. See, that's why I like this fight. Because you got one guy that's willing to take it to you, and then you got another guy that's got some dynamite in their hands, you know? So it's really, like I said, it goes back to the will and the heart in this fight. Can Josecito hold up to what Vargas is going to give him? And can Vargas hold up to the experience and the pressure and the size that Josecito is going to bring to him on September 17th? To me, it's a great matchup. The matchmaking that Golden Boy did for this one, they got it right on the head on that one, man, because it's got a lot of people talking, and it's got definitely leaving the ring wanting to sit down and watch it. And like I said, I wasn't planning to go out there, but I definitely want to go out there now and really, really check it out, you know?
Oh, dude, yeah. And Morales Matisse, how that flipped, that also sold me. I was like, you know what? I was kind of on the fence. And now it's like, you know, that Morales fight, that's another, you know, kind of crossroads type of fight where, you know, if Matisse finally gets that belt, you know, then he's a player. You know, like it or not, how these guys got it. Yeah, they lost their last two fights, but they arguably won their last two fights.
Right.
And I think, you know, it is what it is, dude. I mean, the WBC is horrible. What they did to Tim Bradley is downright criminal. But, you know, it happened. And I don't know if it's, you know, going to be overturned. I don't know what you really say about that. We can get into that later. But just the fight itself is a really good fight. And
it determines
a lot of things. Dude, if Morales is able to win, then we're probably going to see, unfortunately, Morales versus Khan. Which I don't really want to see. I just think that's a welterweight versus a 140-pounder. That's old. You know, I'm very slow. You know, I like the slow guy tour that Morales is doing, you know. Give him slow Argentinian that can box just a little bit, and I'll ride that train. But I'm leaning towards Matisse in that fight, too. I don't know about you.
You know what? I'm not going to rule out the old man, but it's definitely you can't sit there and say he's going to be able to twin what he did against Madonna because it's just two different creatures. I know somebody tweeted Madonna beat Matisse in the amateurs twice, but that's the amateurs, man. I mean, you know, you can't put
totally
that in the pros. You know,
totally different
two different
game.
Things and stuff. But, you know, I want to patch in really quick prospect Ricky Lopez, who's been on hold with us here on Leaving the Ring, and speak to him a little bit. Hold on. Ricky, you there, brother? Let me see. He should be on. I see him on. Hold on. There's something going on here.
We're summoning him for the other side. He's probably, like, cursing us for keeping him on mute all the time.
I know.
he's on mute.
Let's see. It's not, for some reason, it's not letting him cut patch in. Ricky, you there, brother? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I'm here. You hear me?
What's up, man? Yeah, I can hear you now. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. You know, it's been a minute. I've been wanting to interview you, you know. You know, how things for you? I mean, because you haven't been in the boxing scene for a minute. Why the layoff? What's going on with your career right now?
Right now, I was on a little hand injury for a while, man. And, you know, just going through some struggles. You know, this basically my hand, you know, trying to get fights. And I had the same manager as Victor Ortiz, and it just seemed like they were just too busy with Victor, you know, because Victor's on that next level right now. So I just been basically trying to heal my hand. You know, times are kind of hard right now. So I finally, you know, it's healing. I finally got the right person to do it. So I should be in the ring in September.
So the last time we saw you was with Derek Wilson. Now, that hand injury, did it come off of that fight there, or did it happen in the gym? How did it happen?
It actually happened in the gym, just over training, and then I really heard it in my fifth fight against, I think his name was like Edgar Peralta or something like that. That was the name. I heard it in that fight, and I've been fighting ever since with it, you know, and I didn't know if I complained about it after my fight, that Golden Boy would pay for it. So I just been just trying to deal with it myself, and I finally, you know, got the right person to do it.
Now, are you still residing in Oxnard, California? Has there been a change of training? Or, I mean, have you decided to leave there, or are you staying there, and did you pick a new trainer or a new camp to go with?
I want to go back to Oxnard. That's my main goal. But since my seventh fight, I've been training at home in Denver, and then I went to Philly with my friend Danny Garcia. His dad trained me for my fight with Derek. So I've been all over the place, but I'm trying to I'm going to be making my way back to Oxnard here shortly. Once my hand is fixed, I'm going back to Oxnard.
Now, let me ask you this. You know, I know you're saying you're going through some hardship, and is it solely management or a promoter? I mean, have they lost confidence in you, or are they just too busy? I mean, are you happy with them? Or are you looking at a way out? I mean, what's going on mentally for yourself?
Man, that's a good question, you know, because I think it's a little bit everything. Maybe they don't believe in me, or maybe it's something I did in the past, you know. I think they just started treating me different after I left the Oscar De La Hoya training camp when I was sparring Manny Pacquiao. I just got treated just a little bit different. And then when Victor lost against Madonna, I felt like I was getting treated a little bit different. But I don't see how they don't believe in me whenever they put me against an opponent, and, you know, and I beat them, you know, hands down, easier than their sign fighters, you know. I don't know. I think I could beat any of their fighters, and I look better than their fighters. I'm not trying to say cocky or anything. I just know that I just look better than them, and my style is going to last longer. I don't take too much punishment. But I really don't know. I wish I knew the question, but I'm at the point right now is I just want two warm-up fights, and I'm going to fight anybody. I'm going to start calling out everybody, and I just want to beat the best. I want to fight the best and beat the best.
Yeah, I got my co-host, Gabe. Bro. Go ahead, bro. I'm sorry. I was going to introduce you, but you didn't want me to.
I just started talking. This is Gabriel Montoya, Ricky. Welcome to the show, man.
Thank you, Gabriel.
I'm curious, so, you're welcome. Are you still with Golden Boy? Or are you still under promotional contract?
Just promotional contract. Like, we just work fight by fight, so that's pretty much it.
But you stayed in the gym all this time, or how long were you off with the hand injury? And then when did you resume training?
Well, I'm a stubborn, I guess you call me idiot too, because like I just kept on training with the hurt. But I remember a few weeks ago, I was at the point like, Pops, I'm not gonna put a glove on my left hand until I get this hand fixed. You know, I can't deal with this no more because I'm not gonna lie. You know, my family's struggling out here, and
yeah.
Times are hard right now. You know, I just can't go to a
specialist or whatever. Yeah.
A specialist and fix my hand. You know, I don't got that kind of money right now. But you know, times
Damn.
Are hard for everybody. So, I just told my dad, you know what? You know, I can't. I'm not gonna train with it until I get it fixed. But, you know, things got better for me. You know, a couple people helped me out, and I seen a specialist, and he's a great dude, and I'm getting it fixed now, so I should be good in the next 2 weeks.
Man, that's got to give you a little bit of a bitter heart, though, Ricky. I mean, you're seeing everybody else making moves, making money, and you're sitting there, and you're like, damn, what's up? I mean, where's the love, right?
Oh, my God, man, I'm so bitter right now. Like, my heart's so cold. Like, I do not trust anybody right now. Like, yeah, there's a few dudes that have a good heart that, you know, that want to help me out. Like, you know, my cousin Mike Alvarado, you know, if he was in a bigger place, you know, he can help me out. My boy, my best friend Danny Garcia, he would help me. But there's this one person that just gets to me right now. I don't want to say no names. It just makes me so, like, bitter towards him because, you know, I was there since day one with him, and he just shine me away. You know, I know he's a superstar right now, but and he's eating good. But you know, when I helped him out when we were kids, you know, I never asked for nothing back. But when he seen me struggling, he couldn't help me out. So I really didn't want to say that right now over the interview. But you know, who cares? You know, I said it. You know, I didn't say no names, but and I was kind of
right.
bitter at once for this one person. But you know, I still wish him the best. You know, I still hope he wins. You know, in September, but. It is what it is. I can't count on nobody. I just got to do it myself. And I know when I make it, I'm going to be on top, pound for pound. I promise you that.
Now, you were telling us a little bit that there was a change of belief or confidence after leaving De La Hoya camp and the Manny Pacquiao. Tell us a little bit about that, man. I mean, so that the listeners understand where you're coming from on that one there. What was the change of pace for you? What was the change of face with them that you started taking notice of about?
Well, basically, there was just like this when I was part of Oscar. I wasn't even supposed to be there, at first. You know, I was there with my Victor. I was there with Victor Ortiz, and I just went to camp with him. And you know, me and Manny Pacquiao are the same size, and so I'm not even southpaw. They just asked me to spar him. I was like, okay, I'll spar him. I was up there for like a good month. You know, very good people. You know, Oscar's one of the coolest dudes I ever met. You know, he's way better in person than on TV. But, you know, they sent me home in camp. I mean, I got a little confrontation with one of the bus drivers, you know, whatever you want to call him. You know,
uh-huh.
We didn't see eye to eye. And, you know, I got sent home. You know, I didn't think anything was, you know, that big of a drama. You know, that big of a deal, but, you know, I guess word got back to camp, you know, that he said, she said, when I didn't do none of half of that stuff, you know, so he kind of treated me different. And then that was in November and December, right? So I didn't, Golden Boy still didn't have me, looking at me, and I ended up fighting until April 3rd on the Edwin Valero card in Texas when he fought.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember the dude's name. That was my first fight with him, you know, and then they started pumping me up because Victor was their next superstar, and they're going to do this and that for me. So they found me like five months in a row, and I was happy. But once Victor lost, I just felt like, you know, I wasn't getting the same treatment and the love. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, I appreciate everything Golden Boy has done for me. I just wish, you know, they kept me busy. You know, I like being busy. I like fighting once a month or every other month. I just like staying busy because that's when I perform on my best. You know, I never fought a bum with, you know, that was there for a check or bare money, you know, with the gut. You know, every opponent they gave me, you know, was undefeated. He was Olympian, and he had a six-pack, and he was bigger than me. He was trying to take my head off. I knocked
right.
him down. His ass was getting back up, trying to fight me, you know. you know, so I never really fought an opponent, you know, that would just kind of stay down after I knocked him down, like, you know, half of their fighters fought. You know, I always got fed to the lines, you know, that's why it made me a better fighter.
You know, you always got matched, really. I've seen all of your Club Nokia fights live, and
yeah.
I remember seeing you on that Edwin Valero card, and you've always been matched pretty tough. I mean, like, the guy with the worst record maybe was the 2-4-2 guy, Hugo Ramos, but even that guy was a tough guy. That was a tough fight.
Every dude that do fights, he gives everybody trouble. He even gave that new dude I like, Randy Caballero, he gave him a
right.
tough time. He just has
he
a
did.
Concrete
yeah.
chin. He just keeps on coming forward. But, I never complained about getting matched up. You know, I know it's going to be making me a better fighter. You know, and a lot of these dudes that get matched, you know, fighting just bums their whole life, the time they're like 18 and 0, they end up, you know, getting taken a loss or getting knocked out because they're used to fighting you know, easy opponents. So I know, like, give me 15 more fights, I'm going to be pound for pound, you know, one, you know, world champion with God's help. So, you know, I already faced, you know, tough opposition, you know, with Derek Wilson, you know. Derek Wilson was probably my easiest fight out of, you know, the Hugo. Actually, I'll keep it 100 with you. Hugo Ramos was my hardest pro fight out of any fight, out of all 8 fights.
Really? Yeah, because
the
Wilson fight was a close fight. It was only a majority decision. I remember that, you know, I can't pull it completely perfectly out of my mind, but I remember it being competitive. Like, you were down early, but then it was a tough
right.
fight after that.
I felt like I was set up in that fight. I have no excuses. You know, I took it out. Everybody thought I won. The commentators thought I won, but I think I lost because, you know, they gave me a loss, that out. But I just felt like I'd lost too much weight. I just felt like I wasn't myself, you know. They said I was supposed to be in the ring at 9. And I was getting my hand wrapped up when Derek Wilson's already walking to the ring. So I went in the fight kind of cold. You know, everybody that's seen me fight before, you know, I'm a slow starter in the first round. I like to film out, use the ring a lot. And this fight was so flat-footed and so cold, that's why I got knocked down. I was never hurt, though. I got back up before one. You know, and then as the fight got, you know, went on, I started getting warmed up. I started, you know, boxing a little bit.
Well, tell us a little about that, because that first round you were down, what, twice, right?
Twice, you know.
So you're down twice. I mean, what was going through your mind? Were you like, damn, man, my legs are not underneath me? Were you thinking, oh, you know what, this is just not going to be my night? Because you know what, Ricky, you know, I know when you spar, I've told kids, don't go in there, because I've heard kids go, you know what, I'm not going to do good today. And guess what? You normally don't do good that day when you start putting that in your head. Were you kind of walking into that match in that mind frame, or were you? Did you get that being dropped? Did you get up going, you know what, this is just not going to be my night?
You know what? It all started off like, man, I trained my ass off for that fight. I trained perfectly for Derek Wilson. When I started feeling like that, it was, you know, before weigh-ins, you know, we were talking smack to each other. You know, I told him I'm not his past opponents that he knocked out and put out. I told him all that. We went through a little scuffle, and then after, like, I started eating, because I lost 22 pounds with that fight. That was my first fight at 122, and after like I ate, I couldn't stop throwing up. You know, using the restroom all night. You know, usually I weigh in at 124 and I gained into the fight 138, 139.
Mm-hmm.
This fight weighed 122. I only gained a pound and a half of that fight. So once I started like throwing up, and I'm like, damn, man, like, I didn't want to tell my dad or Angel Garcia, you know, because I don't want them, you know, think any negativity about me. You know,
right.
I wanted to try to stay positive. You know, and then I just started like. I threw up like an hour before the fight. I'm like, man, I don't feel good. But I try to keep a smile. But Angel's like, man, you look pale. Are you all right? I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. I just want, you know, I just need to lay down or something. All right, boom. So I go in the locker room, and Derek's already warmed up. And I'm like, yo, Pop, wrap my hands up. And he's like, why are you not supposed to be in the ring by 9? It was like 7 o'clock. And then 10 minutes later, Delvatore's like, you're next. I'm like, man, I just barely get my right hand wrapped. So I was rushed into the ring. When I was in the ring, man, when I'm in the ring, I don't know if it's nothing. This fight, I know if it's my grandpa's friends, uncles, cousins, 6 straight friends. I'm like, oh, my goodness. I was trying to, like, shadow box and try to get ready, but that's why I got knocked down in the first round. I was so flat-footed, and I wasn't myself. So I wasn't really discouraged, you know. I was never hurt, so the second round, I'm like, man, I was upset at myself because I knew that Derek's a fast starter, and I got knocked down. That's the one thing I didn't want to do.
Right.
I want to happen, so... you know, I just try to stay positive as I can be, you know, and, you know, I just try to fight. I didn't, you know, I got too much heart to get stopped or knocked out or just to quit. So I just did my best, and, you know, I didn't come up with the victory. So I couldn't accept it for a long time. Now I accept it, and I'm ready to go, and I'm ready to be the best.
I remember, you know, when that fight was made, I was like, that is not a – having seen a lot of you, you know, I didn't think that was a fight that I would have made for you, you know. Not to say that you can't beat the guy, because, you know, even one guy on Twitter is saying, like, two more rounds and you'd stop. You'd probably stop Wilson because he was gassed. But, you know, and you were really competitive, and once you found your rhythm, you were all up in it. But you're a young fighter, and he had just stopped Charles Huerta, I think, in the previous fight.
Right.
Or maybe two fights before that, and then they made a fight with you. I never really understood the logic. You know?
Well, you know what? I think that was the time. I mean, honestly, I think that was when the streak of the Golden Boy just not matchmaking their fighters very well. It was like
they were just
putting you guys out there to fight. It was like a big test to see which one of you guys was just going to hold up to the big meets. For some reason, like, they just didn't want to build you guys. They just wanted to test warn you guys and build a star right away. Now I kind of see Golden Boy now not being stubborn anymore and saying, you know what, we battle tested our prospects too early, and now they're just kind of disappearing. We need to start building them. And, you know, when I saw that fight, Ricky, too, I got to say, when I seen Derek Wilson, I was like, wow, you know what, seven fights and they're going to put you in already with Derek Wilson? And I saw that fight, and I got to tell you, you were holding your own. I mean, I agree with the guy that just tweeted it. I think that guy, you know, Wilson was gassed out. I think two more rounds you would have had him, but it just sucks to see somebody like you right now that's still young and still can bring it, kind of have to fight against the own grain, against your own company. You know what I mean? That's just kind of weird, man. I can never get that when promoters do something like that.
Yeah, like, I got all hyped up. They're like, yeah, you're the perfect person to, you know, beat Derek. You know, you box. You know, you're a slow starter in the first round. You move a lot. You know, and Derek will be throwing everything. You know, you have good defense, and then by the third round, you know, you should stop him. You know, so in my heart, you know, because I beat him, and I beat the kid in the amateurs. You know, 9 times out of 10, Derek, I'll beat Derek. You know, I swear on my mom, this next fight, if I fight him again, I pray to God every day I fight him, and I'll stop him. I know I'll stop him the first 3 rounds. You know, I just know he can't beat me. That kid can't beat me at all. I won't see anybody beat me for a long time.
Hmm.
Maybe he lost. I think Wilson lost after that, and then we never really saw him again. No,
he moved up. I think he fought like a 130-pounder. He shouldn't be fighting at that weight class.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He got knocked out by Javier Fortuna.
Yeah, Fortuna's the one that knocked him out on the eighth round.
That was
a
great fight. Yeah, that was a great fight. That Fortuna kid can bang. But you're right. Yeah, maybe he's just not big enough for that weight class. But
Now, is there any talk of getting you back? I mean, have they talked to you about getting you back into the ring? Or, I mean, have they even figured out what's going to happen with you? And I mean, is there any communication for you right now?
Yeah, like two weeks ago, Eric Gomez and Rolando Arellano, Victor's manager, they called me up and asked me if I'll be ready in September. And I told them, yeah, you know, I'll be ready. So I've been staying in shape. I'm not sure, Canelo, Victor, or the Victor card, whatever one. But so I've been staying in shape. I run every day. I'm, you know, I work on my right hand all the time, and I'm in shape right now. So whatever one, you know, I'll be ready. So that was the best news I got in a long time. So I was pretty happy.
Now, are they talking about an opponent for you? I mean, have they made any mention about that, or? Are they just saying, hey, we want to get you on there, but they don't know who they're going to get in front of you?
But they asked me how many rounds I want to do, and what weight do I want to fight at. So I told them, you know, 126 and 6 rounds. I don't want to do 4 rounds. I want to do 6 rounds. And, you know, I do better as the rounds get, you know, go. So I told them I want to start 6 rounds, and my next I'll be 8 rounders. So whatever, you know, whatever they put me up against, I'll be ready. I just want two or more fights, and I'll fight anybody out there.
Well, there you go, man. Super Bantamweight. I mean, the Bantamweight is pretty thick out there, so there's plenty of names to start picking through. And, hey, Ricky, man, I appreciate you coming on through and speaking to us, man, and keeping it real. A lot of fight fans and listeners are listening, and they're just saying they're loving everything you have to say. And they really, really appreciate a fighter that comes on and doesn't hold back and really opens up and talks about their career and what's happening in the career. And I gotta say, man, it was a great interview. Gotta have you on again, brother. As soon as you find out if you're gonna who you're gonna fight, we gotta have you back on Leland Arena to talk to us.
For sure, man. I'll be ready to be on it anytime, man. I really appreciate it.
All right, Ricky. Ricky Lopez. Hey, brother. You take care.
You take care too, man. God bless you guys.
Yeah, man. Take care.
Okay, bye.
I was talking to Richard Schaefer yesterday, and and also at the Canelo press conference, and I mentioned that, you know, what's shaping up for over there, and I think there's going to be, you know, room for guys like Ricky Lopez. I think they were talking maybe Jamie Kavanaugh as well on the card for kind of more of the Fight Night Club guys, or, you know, some of the alumni. I think some of the Frank Espinosa's guys. I know Ronnie Rios is going to be on that, or Antonio Orozco. So maybe that's what they're talking about when they say, can you be ready by September? Because look at everything else that's going on that night in Vegas. That card's pretty stacked, and they're going to need to fill it with some prelim bouts, you know, probably three or four in Vegas. So that's probably where he's headed, is September 17th, a nice little comeback. That's what I hope, anyways, for him.
Yeah. You know, the thing is that when they're – this is the thing that I've seen, that I think it goes in anything. When you have two things going on at once, you tend to focus on one a little more than the other. And I hope there's no neglection when it comes to Canelo and Gomez, because it's going to be at the Staples. And it's really going to be a determinant of L.A. fans. They're going to say, do I want to travel 3 to 4 hours and try to find a hotel and book? Or do I want to stay home and still be able to see some good fights at the Staples Center in downtown? So, you know, Golden Boy's got a lot on their plate, man. Hopefully they're able to make a pretty decent card for fight fans to go out to enjoy that don't want to take that 3 to 4 hour trip to Las Vegas.
And they're going to do some sort of like 2 hour concert after the fights too, like he said some Mexican band's name that I don't know that's going to be playing. So there'll be that too.
You better start brushing up on your Spanish music, man, so that you can be grooving. Have your cowboy boots on, your belt buckle, and everything, bro.
That's why I'm going to be in Vegas.
You can start doing your banda yell and everything. Ahua!
As long as it's not Canelo singing, like performing like Manny Pacquiao after his shows.
This is the rumor that I'm hearing here, and I could be wrong, but I heard after for the 2 hour concert, they're going to have Alfonso Gomez fly over there and do a 2 hour rap session for all the fight fans, you know? So, and Will Smith is going to be backup singer for him. So this would be a pretty good night, man.
Yeah. I'll be in Vegas. I'll be fine.
Yeah.
I'm not going to that.
Before we get on any other guests here on Leaving the Ring, let's patch in some fight fans that have been holding on patiently that we want to talk to us here on Leaving the Ring. Let's go with CT, who wants to talk Matisse's versus Morales. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving the Ring.
Hey, how you guys doing tonight?
Good, brother. How you doing?
I'm all right. Yeah, I just want to talk about the Morales-Matisse fight. I think it's a pretty good fight, but, I mean, I want to go with Morales. You know, he has definitely, you know, he has all the skill level and stuff like that. But I think this night, I think Matisse is going to say, man, fuck this. You know what I'm saying? I came up short twice.
Right.
Decisions. I think he's going to be a little bit more determined. But I'll give Morales a good shot after, you know, what he did against Maidana. It's definitely possible, though.
You know,
it's definitely possible.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I agree with you to that point when he says, he's like, you know, screw this, man. I've been burned twice. You know, what was the name of the other fighter that was also that was coming down here to the States? Oh, God. You know what? I have him in my head. I could picture him. And he's kind of fell off. He's no longer a factor. He hasn't even fought.
Saddam Ali.
There you go.
Saddam Ali came out twice. Got robbed twice, never saw him again.
and never saw him again. And with my thesis is that I'm wondering, though, if – because, you know, you got to sit there and think that this brother's came out, he's fought his ass off, and even though he's fought his ass off, he still gets the short end of the stick. You know, and I'm wondering now, at this moment, is he starting to feel as the opponent, you know? Is he starting to feel like, you know what, no matter what, you know what, just give me my paycheck. I'm just going to come out, I'm going to perform, and that's it. Because you got to start wondering when a fighter, because you know what, a lot of people don't really get this, but fighters are really sensitive to a certain point. You know, that's a really big blow to your ego when you're training your ass for 3 months and you're getting away from your family and you're doing these regimens and you have in your mind, I'm the best and I'm going to do this. And then you come out and then you put your guts and your heart and your mind and your soul in the hands of three idiots who have no clue what they're watching, and then you slowly walk away feeling empty, feeling like, you know what, that's it? That's the appreciation that I get? Mentally, they say, you know what, it's a 90% mental game, and then the rest is just all physical. I don't know, man. I hope Matisse hasn't kind of, you know, got depressed about it and say, you know what, screw it, I'm an opponent, because it's going to be a big lack for us fight fans who are really stoked up on about him and want to see him fight and get his payday. Don't get me wrong. I'm a Morales fan, so don't send me some hate emails. I'm a Morales fan, but we want to see some new superstars come up in the game as well, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm surprised that he even came back to the States for another fight like that.
Me too.
I would have been like, fuck this, I'm staying in Argentina.
Exactly. I would have came up with the same excuse that Barros said. I have my visa, no good, too bad, I can't go, I stay. You know what
but
I mean?
It's kind of a case, though, of finally, like, some justice. You know, he gets robbed, Morales gets robbed. Now, you know, Morales gets to fight for that kind of tainted history of getting the, you know, the first Mexican with four belts and four divisions.
Right.
But he gets a big fight. And Matisse, he gets robbed twice, arguably the first time. I'm still kind of on the fence about the Judah fight. But then he gets to turn around and gets another big fight. I mean, I wouldn't go back to Argentina. If they didn't offer me this, I'd be thinking about it. But you know, for him to get a big fight like this, it's awesome. You know, it's kind of a rarity, especially the same day that we lost Kelly Pavlik in a comeback tune-up fight, you know. We get this, which is kind of good, you know.
And I also I give Morales a good shot at this weight class, because to me, I think it's a healthy weight class for him. You know what I mean? He's not too drained out. He's at where, you know, he can keep his strength, and he's definitely a throwback fighter to me. I mean, every time I see him fight, I'm like, damn.
Oh,
you
know,
I almost think, like, something's wrong with the guy, because he's always fighting these tough fucking fighters and shit.
I love what he said at the press conference. He was like, there are people before my last fight that said I was crazy.
Right.
You know what? I am crazy. I'm crazy about what I do. And it's like, yeah, it's exactly right. You know, he loves his job. And you can see it, like, on his face. He's like, you know, I love doing this. And as long as I can, I'm going to keep fighting tough guys. And he's not interested in, like, what the Barrera Tour is, you know, which is kind of fighting older dudes or kind of, like, guys that don't have the same experience level and blowing them out to make some money. Eric wants to be the best. I think he still has that chip on his shoulder about Barrera.
Yeah.
And if you can somehow beat him, you know, getting the four titles, and, you know, he does not like that man.
No, he don't. Hey, CT, thank you, brother, for calling in, man. I'm going to put you back on hold, okay?
All right.
Asked him about that the last time when he was getting ready for Maidana and asking him, you know, do you want that rematch with Barrera? You know, do you want some revenge? And, like, his words were politic, but the look in his eyes was like, I hate that dude, you know?
Right.
I hate that dude. And he was like, well, he doesn't look good in his last few fights. If he looks good, then maybe I'll fight him, you know? But right now, he doesn't look like he's worth it.
Yeah. You know, the thing is that if that fight was to happen, regardless, Barrera, you know, I'd say it would sell. I think people still want it. I would still want to see it. You know, it's just because the three fights, or trilogy fights, was just so great. You know, just, I think Morales is right. We're going to have to judge him at what he looks like against Lucas Matisse in his fight before we could start saying that Eric looks like the fresher guy, because Eric did look like the fresher and more competitive guy against Madonna, you know. But I'm not taking anything away from Madonna. I did have a chance to interview him when he came down to the HP Pavilion in San Jose, and he said, I only had 2 weeks to train for that fight, you know, because... It's the same old story when it comes to fighters sometimes, unfortunately. Let's get some other fight fans. But then after this, I do want to talk about 2 weeks. 2 weeks. You know, I want to talk about Victor Calle against Lamont Peterson. It was a great fight.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, you know what? I said it on Twitter. Some folks were kind of upset because they really thought I was taking them. I was kind of taking a shot at Peterson, but I wasn't. I was just saying, you know, the boxing gods just did not bless this guy with power. But you imagine if he did, because he's really almost like a Josecito, a guy that comes forward, can box when he chooses to box, but he likes to bang. He likes to mix it up. He likes to ignore what the trainer's telling him what to do. And he was landing some hellacious right hands and even left hooks occasionally against Victor, where at some point you had to sit back and you just had to say, if this guy had Madonna's power, would we be standing up? Would we have a superstar? I think we would. You know, and Peterson being talked about having Khan next, I got to say, even though I think Khan takes that fight, Peterson's going to bring that fight to him. It'd still be a good fight, you know. But that, like I said, that's a rumor. But anyways, this pattern.
Yeah, well,
he's
the mandatory, and
right.
You know, I don't know if I could say he wins that fight, but yeah, dude, I think Khan would know who's in a fight. He would definitely have known he'd been in one after the fight. He's just such a grinder, you know.
He is.
You
the thing is,
him,
Khan,
you can kind of box him, and he'll keep coming forward.
Right. The thing though is, Khan's legs would probably be the winner of that fight, because Khan's legs are a lot quicker. He circles a lot more, and you're just going to see Peterson just kind of chase him around, you know? And Khan will pick his pots and shots, and he would do this and that and go to the body, and he'll probably get clipped by Peterson, but just not enough where Peterson can overwhelm him and outpoint him and be all over him. You know, Khan's style, to me, for Peterson, just is – you hear that saying, style make fights. This style does not match well for Peterson at all. In my opinion, I think Peterson does bring it to him, but he's going to have a hell of a time chasing the rabbit around the ring.
Yeah, I agree. You know, it's going to be it might be a tough fight to watch even, just because of that, you know. But that's, you know, that's neither. I don't want to get that guy with the mask to call back in and start defending Khan. So I don't really want to talk about Khan.
Oh, yeah, that's right, man. Mike Werner, the ski mask boxing analysis from UK. Let's batch in some fight fans here. Kino from Las Vegas.
Yes, come on.
What's up, brother? You want to talk Vargas and Lopez? What's going on?
Oh, what's going on, man? You guys are talking. Man, here's what I'll do, Katu. And I want to talk about four fighters real quick and put them all in a nutshell real quick about, you know, the underrated fighters that no one's talking about, the ones that are not getting paid yet. The ones that all the big names are scared to fight, and now they're finally going to get the chance to fight him. You know, we're talking about my boy Ricky Lopez, is a good friend of mine. I just heard on the interview. Big up to him. You know, you got your Danny Swift Garcia, who's going to be fighting Kendall Hull. Oh, my God, I can't wait to see that. You know what I mean? You got Mike Alvarado that's coming up. Hasn't got the shine yet, but I think we'll crush the Devin Alexander or crush the Maidana that makes excuses about how he trains this and he's all that. But, you know, when he fights Morales, I don't know. These guys all these excuses, but... You know, the main thing here is that these boys ain't scared. Jesse Vargas ain't scared. Danny Swift ain't scared. Mike Alvarado's not scared. These guys are tough boys from the streets, grew up in the hip-hop, you know, straight from the gutter areas. And these guys are ready to fight. And I'm telling everyone right now, they better watch out for these guys.
You know what? You're right, brother. You're absolutely right.
I don't think he's going to... be able to. Well, I think he's the goods, you know. But I wonder, one, how long he can stay at 140.
Who's that, Mike Alvarado?
Yeah, Alexander's already moving to 147. So that fight's kind of.
I don't know why he ain't got no pop at 140.
Right.
Yeah. No, I'm the bloom's kind of off the rose with him. But maybe he'll get a little more stamina, a little more pop to him. You know, a little more snap in him at when he's not killing himself to make weight. I mean, that's his reasoning for his failures in his last couple of fights. I'm curious to see what he's like, because
you know, before before the losses, we were all saying that he's going to be a good welterweight, that his frame is really, you know, and his body is made for that. So I'm wondering, you know, the same thing with Ortiz. We kept saying that he should move to 140. He's kind of fading out, and look at him in the weigh-ins, and now look at him. He's gigantic at 147. So I wonder, but, dude, Alvarado, the fight I want to see Alvarado in is Alvarado versus Brandon Rios at 140.
Just going to say that. Bam Bam Rios versus Mile High Mike Alvarado. What a homeboy matchup. Denver versus, you know, we know that Rios is from Kansas, not too far from Denver, which is more of the areas that they're really from, even though he's out in Oxnard now training with the Garcias. I would love to see that fight. I think that would bring a lot of money to the table, a lot of controversy, a lot of stuff at the podium. Oh, my God. Make it happen.
Yeah, that fight would be fantastic. You know, I mean, I want to see, you know what, though? Even if that fight doesn't happen, still you got some other names out there that he can make himself available and still create enough buzz where fight fans that don't know a whole lot about Mike Alvarado can go, oh, okay, this is the dude that you guys are talking about here on Leaving the Ring. He can still get at Urbano Antillon, who still may make up a great matchup for him, you know? Another guy that's going to come and fight for him. What was that, Gabe?
I wouldn't want to see Antillon versus Alvarado.
You wouldn't want to?
No, man. I think Urbano's done.
I think Urbano's done, too. I think Rios tapped him really good. I mean, he's not the same anymore after that fight.
Oh, he hasn't been the same for a long time, I think, you know? We all knew that.
Yeah, absolutely.
We all knew that, man, you know?
Yeah.
But, I mean, all these guys are going to meet at a crossroads, whether at 140 or 147. Garcia, you know, you got Lopez, if he makes it past Vargas, and you got Mike Alvarez. I mean, these guys got to fight each other. You know, like when Vargas fought De La Hoya, look at the grudge match. Look at it brought the most money ever to Vegas of all time. Everybody was dying to see that fight. We got to see these fights. It's going to bring boxing back. Everybody's going to start paying for these pay-per-views, and you're going to see badass fights, man. I'm serious.
I'm wondering about Garcia and the hold fight, too. I mean, it's kind of like, I don't know if it's exactly the same kind of fight as Lopez versus Vargas. So I think they're closer to the same level, although Lopez has more experience. But with Garcia, I'm not quite sold yet. You know, there's times when I'm really sold. And when he first turned pro, I wasn't sure of him. And I've watched him, you know, his pro debut and a ton of his fights and kind of followed him along. And then recently I thought he was looking better. In his last fight, I wasn't terribly blown away. And they've actually had him in with a couple, like with a mismatch before that. But this fight will say a lot, you know, because Kendall
I just texted him earlier and told him I'm booking my flight. Me and my girl are booking a flight to go see him in L.A.'s fight against Holt. Now, I'm going to text him again. I really think he needs to get a nutritionist, and he really needs to work with, a strength and conditioning coach like a Rizzo or a Mackie or somebody with the Conte. I know people talk a lot of stuff about Conte, but, you know, I think he knows what he's doing. He has nothing to hide anymore. But, you know, these guys need to build their stamina. They need to get that wind going. They need to have better feet, more pop to their punches. Exactly right. That's what you want to see, and that's what he needs.
The thing with him is he seemed like he gasped. And I'm like, dude, how can you be in the prime of your life, young kid, probably never smoked, never drank, pure athlete, and you're getting tired, and you're in
from not being active.
12-round fights. Yeah,
from
maybe
not being active. Yeah, it's just not – it's, you know what, I don't know whether it's – I don't think it's him. I think it just falls back to – promoter management when they're not doing the justice they need to do. You know, like it goes with when you have too many fighters in a stable camp, you tend to neglect the others that are around. You know, I mean, I've seen you know, Swift a couple times in San Jose and he fought. I've seen him at other venues fight. Excuse me, I've seen him fight. You know, I was pumped up about him, and then again, you know, you saw another guy just like Ricky Lopez that just fell off. You know, where it was like, okay, what happened to these guys? You know, why are they not keeping them consistent? Then you see him step up. He gets on Telefuturo, Garcia, and you're right. You were sitting there. You go like, is this the same kid that I was, you know, kind of stoked up about? But then you start thinking, this is what happens when you keep a guy to collect dust. They have to shake it off. And that's
right.
What happens about it, you know. And Kendall Hall, I got to tell you this. If the dust is not shooken off of him, Kendall Hall's going to take it off.
You're right. And you know what? He has nothing to lose in this fight, man. This is a real crossroads fight with him. That's why they made it. You know, he's on his way back up. It seems like he got his head together. And I hope Swift's listening because this kid's going to come and fight. He's going to be in shape.
Oh, yeah.
And he's coming to get Garcia. And that's why I really want to text Garcia and say, hey, man, get with the right people. Get your ass in shape. Eat right this fucking camp and get in there and beat him because that's what he's going to have to do.
Yep, definitely going to have to do that because Kendall Holt, that guy, is just he's got the mind frame. I'm the it factor. You have to get through me. I mean, you talk to him about any fight that he's lost. He says he has excuses for them. He really, mm-hmm. truly believes he didn't lose that fight. Swift is going to have to be really swift when it comes to Kendall Hall's right hand because that right hand is going to come to play. I tell you that. It's not a playground. It's going to have some fun, man. Definitely.
It's going to be awesome, man.
Yeah, I can't wait for that fight.
Hey, Kino, thank you, brother, for calling in.
Thank you, guys. I'll be calling again. I appreciate it. Love your show, man. God bless you guys.
Hey, same thing.
Take care, man.
All right.
You know what, man? Let me tell you this. And Gabe, I was looking at this yesterday. Let me pull it up really quick. You know, I got all kinds of windows up on my computer here. But Macklin, who was signed with Lou DiBella. Right? He just signed with Lou DiBella yesterday, I believe. Am
mm-hmm.
I right about that? Okay.
You are right about that.
And I was looking at Lou DiBella, and I was saying, dude, this guy pretty much has all the middleweights. You know? When it comes down to Andy Lee, right? He's got Andy Lee. Here, let me pull this up, because I don't want to mess up the names. You know, I want to make sure that I got all the names correct here before I start yapping away. Okay? The only name that he doesn't have is like Peter Kitchock-Quillen. But he's got the king, Sergio Martinez, which some fight fans and writers are turning against him for some reason. They're really dumping on him pretty hard because he's going to be fighting Darren Barker, okay? And the odds are just crazy on that fight if you haven't been keeping up with it. I don't even know the odds right now off the top of the head.
Darren's plus 13. He's like a 13-1 underdog. Martinez is like minus like 2,600 almost. So like you got to lay, you know, 26 to win one, which, you know, people are kind of going crazy about all that. I'll let you finish your point. But, you know, isn't Ortiz like, you know, 8-1?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, and people are asking for $60 for that and they're calling it a top fight and a tough matchup. I mean, aren't you kind of splitting hairs at some point with the odds? I mean, you know, mismatches are mismatches. Manny's been doing them for years. You know, Floyd's been the favorite by a huge margin for years. I don't know. I thought it was kind of picking on Martinez and DiBella when everybody else does the same damn thing. They just do it on pay-per-view. But that's just me. So go on. Sorry.
No. Because I'm still looking for what I got going on here. Well, Macklin, who beat Felix Stern up in Germany, and the fight was just completely taken away from him. I don't know, fight fans, you got to go back and check that out and see that. But I can't find exactly what I had. I knew I should have written this down, you know, but I didn't. But I'm going to go with Matthew Macklin, and he's got Andy Garcia, and I mean, not Andy Garcia, he's got Andy Lee, and he's got Sergio Martinez, and I believe he has like Brian Vera, if I remember correctly, okay?
Yeah.
All right, but I know he has like a number. I think he has like 5 or 6 middleweights, okay. And I was sitting there and I was like, you know what, Lou DiBella really, really, honestly has the cards in his hands to make great fights here, okay, because he could possibly start a tournament on HBO or on Showtime and put all these guys in a middleweight tournament, which we've seen happen when Don King at the time was still a ruler as a promoter, did with Felix Trinidad. You know, where you see Sergio Martinez at this point right now, where you see fight fans are criticizing Darren Barker and, you know, you got Pirog over here and you got this guy. Why not, since you have pretty much all the middleweights, how's all the widowweights? What's up with that? You have all the widowweights and, you have the middleweights, you have all the contenders and you got the champion. Why not entice some other promoter to bring on maybe 2 more or even just 1 more, because I don't know. I think it's either 5 or 6 middleweights that he does have. But bring on 2 other ones so you don't make it seem biased and present that to the networks. We're in it, you almost have a Super 6, but it's a middleweight tournament.
I threw that at Kerry Davis, and after Martinez knocked out Paul Williams, and they had no interest in it at the time. It drives me crazy because they keep running into the same problem with Martinez. The network isn't building anybody for the guy. They're not, you know, sometimes they act like promoters, like you saw with Tim Bradley and Devin Alexander, and they're shitty at it. And they force fights that didn't really need to happen. I still contend that fight absolutely did not need to happen just then. People were like, no, we know, we've got clarity. But nobody saw it. Nobody cared. It flopped as a fight on every level. But then you look at Martinez and you go, here's a guy that's winning. You could make some money on him. At least get some ratings going with the guy. Granted, his promoter isn't exactly, you know, they're not pulling a top rank with him. They're not, you know, doing multi-city tours with Martinez. He's kind of promoting himself a lot of the time. But in terms of a network, what you're talking about, they're not building up. Who's the threat? Where's the storyline? Where's another middleweight? I mean, yes, Peter Quillen is starting to make some noise. Matthew
right.
Macklin on an international level, you know, only hardcore fight fans know who he is, even though I think Martinez-Macklin's going to be a hell of a fight when it does happen, because I imagine that's why he signed him, is to kind of build towards that. It doesn't make any sense to me. You know, even Arislandi Lara, who's a 154-pounder, but, you know, you could put him in there with Martinez. You could build towards that. I haven't heard any mention of that fight, or even... It just seems like the fight schedule is kind of random.
Well,
maybe
see,
it's
but
because
the,
it's up to the promoter.
But the thing here, Gable, is that we all thought that of the Super Six. You know what I mean? When you had Mikael Kessler, we were all looking at, okay, these guys, like, we thought Ward was too green, Doral was going to be too green, Arthur Abraham was going to be the big puncher, Carl Frotz, you know, big puncher, but wasn't really sure because of his boxing skills. That's why, to me, I think a middleweight tournament would kind of answer a lot of questions and doubts that we do have, because we really don't know how competitive the fight's going to be until the fight really does happen. You know, on paper, we can judge, but in the ring, we have a better judgment because now it's touchy-see Philly type of thing. You know what I mean? And that's why I think that's really something neat. Now, Kerry Davis and HBO, I think the whole soul thing is that it's like, it's almost like an elementary type of thing with these guys, you know, unfortunately, even with promoters, you know, it's an elementary thing. Well, I don't want to copy what he did, and I don't, you know, oh, these, look at these guys, they did exactly what we did. You know what I mean? It's like, let's grow up a little bit and let's just try to make the best fights for the fans. The guys that really honestly dig deep into their pockets, even in this economy right now, you know, a lot of fight fans out there, let's be honest, we can't afford to pay for these, you know, $59.50 or whatever the cost is, you know, because I don't pay for them.
$55. Yeah. Yeah. I have no idea what it is, because I haven't paid for it for years. But
the honest guys, let's talk about the honest blue-collar fighters out there that are really digging into their pockets to pay for these fights. Or they're heading out to the fights and they're able, they take $40 or $20 because to buy alcohol at an arena or at a casino, we're looking at $12 for a cup, you know? So
yeah.
Why not give what fight fans are already willing to travel and give out to the fighters? You know, why not show appreciation? That's what I don't get about HBO and these promoters. Just show some appreciation. Just put it together, and then let's see if it works or it doesn't. What's the worst that can happen? We're all just going to say it didn't work. Let's move on to the next one.
I think what you're looking for is clarity, you know. And
right.
That's the thing. I always hate to get into the MMA versus, you know, or UFC is really
right.
What you're talking about versus boxing. But the one thing that I love about them is that for the fans, there's a certain clarity. It's like a season. You know, when one pay-per-view ends, literally the last fight, or even each fight, the next guy, you know, the winner's opponent comes into the ring and they do an interview or they talk. It's almost like wrestling. But we already know that this guy is lined up to fight this guy, and here's the date. It's going to be in this city and this pay-per-view, and you start getting excited about it and talking about it. Boxing doesn't have that, and I was hoping that when the Promoters Association was created over a year ago or so, that's kind of at least one thing that we would move towards, is that these guys would talk to each other and say, you know, I've got such and such fighters in these divisions, and everybody would kind of lay their cards out and say, let's build towards a certain kind of clarity in that. It's not even really like a clarity, it's like a continuity, you know, where everything kind of flows into each other and builds towards things. You know, when guys like Manny Pacquiao and Floyd, you know, when any fighter gets to that level, they're kind of in their own league and not really a part of it. But you could maybe have some, you know, a few more guys like that come out of that kind of system. You know, it's not necessarily a league so much as a plan, you know, that everybody agrees to, that, you know, let's move these fights or let's move towards these fights. I've got these marquee guys. I've got these B sides and these C sides. How can we all use these pieces to for the greater good of boxing? The problem is Bob Arum, Golden Boy, any of these people, they don't really care about the business of or the sport of boxing. They care about the business of it and how that business serves them. And so that's ultimately why we end up with this stuff. And then you get guys like Ross Greenberg, you know, running boxing into the ground because he's not really paying attention to the future of the sport over the last 10 years, you know, and overspending and bidding against itself so that, you know, certain fights, you know, by the middle of the year, like look what we have now, they've already spent their whole budget.
Right.
And so now we're getting like Hopkins Dawson on pay-per-view because their HBO's out of money. You know, so many problems. But I think you're right. I think Lou is starting to – maybe that's his plan. He's putting pieces together and just going to do his own thing. But
well, he's already given us
–
Right. And he's already – I think he's already given us, because I believe it's going to be Andy Lee and Vera who's going to be stepping in. Yeah, I mean, that's a great matchup. I mean, you know what I mean? I mean, I know there's criticism of Lou, and there's things that Lou DiBella does that does make us scratch our heads and kind of – recite that old song, things that make you go, huh? Right? But along the lines of everything else he's done, the greater of what he's done has been for boxing, has been for the fans, you know, because the fact is he's a boxing man himself here. And giving us Andy Lee and Brian Vera is a great, great fight. That's a, you know, it's not one of your top of the league, you know, it's not your Floyd versus Pacquiao thing, but it's definitely a fight where you're going to sit back and go, you know what, we're going to get our money's worth. Just like the Rodriguez and Wallach fight. You got your money's worth. You got your barbecue going and your brewskis out. And trust me, if you had a heavy buzz, it was gone because you didn't even pay attention to the food on the plate and to the beer in the bottle. You know, that's how much of a great fight it was. You know, I just enjoy particular things like that. You know, I want to talk about Miranda. Edison Miranda, man, god damn, brother, what's going on? You know,
nothing.
You know what, Gabe? I didn't think he was going to be competitive just because he was fighting in a division, a light heavyweight division, where he hadn't really kind of played in the pool with yet. But he was being competitive, you know, and he was having his moment. But he's almost like a Galata. You know, he doesn't know not to foul. He has to foul some way or another. The last, with the referee, you know, counting him out, you know, waving it off, I don't feel bad for him. But at the same time, it just makes me wonder if he would have just gave him another warning, what could have happened? What might have happened?
I thought Vic Draculich was way over officious. You know, I thought. One, I didn't see how bad that first low blow wasn't that bad to even take a point. But it didn't seem like he'd even warned him to that point. He just went straight to taking
the
point.
No, that first round. That first round, he took it away from him. Yeah, you know?
Yeah, and I was like, okay, now you put the guy down a round. He was already lost a round. Now he's down 2 points. It just didn't make any sense. To me, you know, most refs do a couple warnings, maybe three, and then finally take the point. If the problem is really bad. He took a point for the way that Jourdain was acting, not for what he saw. He was even behind Miranda. So I don't even know how good of a view he had of that first low blow. And then
you know,
the final one wasn't even that bad, I didn't think. None of them were that bad. Maybe the second one was on the cup, but the third one wasn't so bad that you end that fight when it's just heating up. I mean, at some point, you know, is it really affecting Jourdain? Do you see him limping? Is he that hurt?
No.
I didn't see that. I didn't see it changing the course of the fight. But it was just heating up, and all these people paid money, and it's on TV. I think he let that fight go. I know Steve Smoger let that fight go.
Well, you know, that kind of – but it goes back to thinking, should we have instant replay? Because you're absolutely right. Vic Darchinian was back. Anderson Miranda's back was facing Vic Darchinian. And Vic Darchinian. Dragulich. I'm reading something at the same time. You know, he's watching the back view of Anderson Miranda. So how was he able to see that? He doesn't have Superman vision, you know. To me, it seems that after that round, it should have been called by the – if we had this rule, if this rule was set, that the corner could call that, you know, call on that call and have an instant replay so you could see that he wasn't able to see that shot and to make sure if it was an illegal low blow punch, you know, and then go off of there where they could have overturned that call. But – I think sometimes we just put a little bit too much trust with the refs, and I don't know what was going on with them. Was he having an off? I mean, he definitely had to have an off night, but I still go back. Do I feel bad for Miranda? The only thing I could just keep going back to, though, was that you ended up a fight that was starting to heat up, and the if factor. Could Miranda have pulled it off? Was he becoming stronger? Was he going to break him down? I mean, he was going to the body. He surely was going to the body. He was trying to commit to the body. And he was landing some pretty heavy shots in that fight before he got ended. I don't know.
Yeah, I thought he was doing good. You know, he was trying to come on a little bit. I mean, it's hard to have faith in Edison Miranda at this point. He's, you know, he's had a lot of chances and he's generally come up short, but he didn't look like he was out of shape. You know, he looked like he was still kind of present in the fight. I thought that move that he was doing where he put his hands down and was eating punch after punch after punch, that was kind of terrible. But, you know, but he was still – he took the shots and kept going. There was a long way to go in that fight. I just thought, wow, you just kind of ended a fight that it was looking like it was going to be not a classic, but certainly a good fight.
A good fight. A fight that we, you know we would have enough to talk about, you know, but and it was just short-lived for us, man. It was taken away from us. Let's pass it to some fight fans. Want to talk boxing, any topic, and just make sure. It's not MMA talk. It's boxing talk. There's no MMA minute here on Leaving in the Ring. Rodrigo, what's up, brother?
Oh, hey, how's it going, fellas?
Good, man. How you doing, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving in the Ring.
Oh, hey, I'm kind of depressed, y'all. I ain't gonna lie. I was at work today, and I'm here in San Antonio. I didn't know that Eric Morales' press conference was going on today, but so I missed it, and that's the topic. I'm serious. I go to everything that's boxing, no matter how small or how large
right.
I'm there. But that's what I was going to ask. I mean, I don't know if y'all talked about this already. Is it bittersweet that, you know, okay, the WBC, yeah, you know, they kind of did wrong and stripped Bradley, but they're also – Matisse is also getting shot at the WBC, you know, after he kind of deserved it.
Let me correct you with that. Jose Suleiman sent out a letter stating that he did not strip Timothy Bradley. He's a champion on what was the term, Gabriel, that he used?
Amaretta. Yeah, champion in recess.
Oh, that's the purple belt, right? Is that the purple one or the blue one?
Yeah,
or the future one? I don't know, but yeah, I mean,
it's the belt with the picture of the guy and on the unemployment line, just getting laid off.
the WBC, yeah, that's funny. Yeah, but yeah, I mean, you know, Morales, you know, like I went to that fight and I thought he was gonna get blown out by his last fight, and I thought, but this fight, I don't know. I'm kind of thinking that I'm having the same feeling, but I like Matisse, but what's y'all's thoughts on that? I mean, he's got pop, but he's also got boxing skills, but he's just. I don't know, more like it's like you're all posting. Morales said something about what he's crazy for what he does or something like that.
Right.
I mean, who's y'all pick on this? How do y'all think it's gonna go down?
You know what? I like this fight a lot. There's two reasons why I like this fight. The first reason is because there's gonna be action. The second reason is because there's gonna be action. You know what I mean? You got two guys that they're gonna come to fight. Eric Morales is a warrior. He's a Mexican warrior. He doesn't know any other way of doing it. You know what I mean? And Matisse is an Argentinian warrior that just doesn't know another way of doing it as well. So, who takes this fight? What do you bet against? Do you bet against the experience, or do you bet against with youth? And I think that's what it kind of boils boils down to in this fight. I know, Madonna, we just didn't give Eric Morales any chance of winning this fight, but now that he showed us what his capabilities and what he still can do, with the legend, a living legend, still is able to breathe in his lungs and hold in there. Should we count him out? I don't think so. I think what we need to do now is sit back and look at everything that he's done throughout his career and go with a game plan and look at what he's doing. You know? I don't know. Gabe, what do you think?
Is one of you being abducted by terrorists?
That's wild. I had to put Rob on mute right now because, it sounded like he was flying or something, man. Go for it. What were you going
to
say, Gabe?
Like he was about to skydive real quick, but I had a boxing question. Hang on. I like that fight. You know, I think it's going to be an all action. We kind of talked about it earlier in the show. It's going to come down to, you know, all the little subtle things and the ability to slow the game down the way he was against Maidana. You know, will Morales be able to do that against Matisse, who's got that nice jab? You know, and Maidana is the style that jabs forgot, you know, whereas Matisse, you know, he boxes just a little bit. He's got a nice tighter frame. He kind of comes right at you, shoots that jab to the chest. Is that going to be enough to, you know, kind of walk down Morales? Is he going to be able to cut off the ring, move the head? And really the big question is, you know, when Maidana landed on Morales, he didn't really hurt him. Mm-hmm. When Matisse lands on Morales, will he? And vice versa, Morales was able to hurt Maidana. It kind of set him up and walk him into shots. Is he going to be able to do that to Matisse? You know, we'll see. And what are the losses? To me, the big question. You know, Matisse started a little bit quicker. He was able to drop Devin Alexander. He didn't really fade out. He was kind of, you know, even paced throughout the whole fight. But what are those losses going to do to his mindset? Does he think he now has to start faster, or is he stick with what he's doing and just believe that somebody someday is going to give him a decision? How is he going to fight coming off those controversial losses? That's a big key in this. Whereas Morales is coming in with the confidence of his last fight, going, you know what, I've stepped up in all my last fights, and finally, you know, fought a young elite guy, and I took him behind the woodshed. Let's do it again. Whereas, you know, Matisse is coming from a very different mental place. I think that's the key, or one of many keys in this fight.
You know, I like the fact that you mentioned about that jab, because that was one of the key factors with Madonna. It was that jab of Eric Morales, a lot of us don't really speak on that, but that jab is just not a range finder. It's a jab to keep you off balance. And we talked about that, of the success he was having immediately after that fight, you know, after the Madonna fight, that he was able to keep Marcos Chino Madonna off balance with that jab. And he was able to really buy himself time to figure out what he was going to do next. What was the next thing to line up, to land something, or to get away from, you know? And that's where Lucas is and his team are going to really have to focus on, is how to get around that jab, you know, how to take that jab away and not make it a major factor the way he was able to do it against his fellow men, Artesian countrymen, Madonna. You know, so to me, it's really not a whole lot of game plan that Eric Morales has got to kind of, you know, write up and configure and try to figure what he's going to do with Matisse's. It's Lucas and his team have a lot more of videotape and writings on the chalkboard of how they're going to bring their game plan and how they're going to oppose it against Morales. You know, to me, this is a huge step up. They're not going against the Devon Alexander, who uses only youth and speed. You know, they're not going to go against a Zab Judah that he kind of waits for you to do particular things, you know, to for him to get off or for him to counter. He's actually fighting a guy that's going to use experience, aggression, and smarts all in one, you know, and doesn't gas out and has a good chin and throws great combinations and has been in wars. And you know what? He's not being tested. It's Matisse who's being tested in this fight here. That's my opinion about it. I could be wrong, though. I've been wrong, you know, a few times here and there. That's why I call myself 97.
Well, I don't think Matisse is going to bring anything to the table that Morales has never seen before.
Right.
But, yeah, that veteran guile, you know, all that experience that Morales brings to bear, just his presence. You know, I mean, he's got, it's like watching Josecito and young, you know, Jesse Vargas. They're both you know, they're good fighters and everything, but they're young, and their presence isn't the same. They're a little bit nervous, although Lopez is a little more settled in what he wants to say, a little more forthright. You know, Jesse has a good interview and everything, but he's a kid. You know, he's not, I think, as used to meeting strangers and talking to them about himself as Lopez is. But then you meet Morales, and all these people are there to see him. All the cameras are in his face, and he's just very stolid. He just kind of stands there, has this little bit of a smile on his face, and kind of answers everything, you know, earnestly. And he's a very intelligent guy. He's been around the block. You know, he's a walking
right.
legend. And that's a presence that's always hard to deal with, you know. You're fighting the legend as much as you're fighting the man. You know, and when he's not doing something, is he hiding something? You know, there's a lot of thoughts that are probably going through the mind of a fighter facing him, especially now that he's older. You know, he's a little trickier. And to me, he reminds me of, and this is kind of a weird analogy, but it's like when you're playing Fight Night and you're deep in the game, and so you're a little bit slower, your energy's kind of lower, and you've got to walk people in traps just a little bit. That's kind of where Eric Morales starts right now. He's a little slower, you know, he's a little bit out of his weight class, but he's got to be trickier, and I think he's kind of hiding things a little bit more. I think Maidana was really surprised by how good he was, and when he started using that jab, and it was different than the Morales jab that I remember. It was a little bit harder, and it was pretty accurate. I think Maidana was really surprised by that, having to deal with it, and his ability to kind of change timing and smother punches by leaning back along the ropes. All those little things. I'm wondering if Matisse can handle that, or if his brute strength and youth is just going to walk right into him, and just, you know, none of that stuff's going to matter. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll definitely see if whether or not that fight with Maidana was a fluke. I mean, I don't think so. Matisse, to me, he's just got a lot. He's got a lot on his plate. He's got a legend in front of him, and he's got a crowd in front of him. He's going to be on one of the biggest pay-per-view cards in his career. He's got a crowd, a hostile crowd. A lot of Mexicans are going to be out there rooting for Morales. So he's got a lot of things that he's up against, and he's got to be for it, you know. The one thing he's got to be for is that he's going to be fighting a guy that's going to come out to try to get that title and try to beat the odds and beat the naysayers. You know, Eric Morales has been in this position, like he said before. You know, there's nothing new. This is not nothing new to this guy. You know, he's been fighting for how many years? He grew up above a boxing gym. So Matisse is just not fighting. He's just not fighting a fighter. He's fighting an enigma, you know, in a lot of ways. It's just not Eric Morales he's fighting.
You know, it's been kind of a trip, too, Eric Morales. Like, I forget which fight it was. There was some, I think it was around the time that Oscar left Bob Arum.
Mm-hmm.
And Morales had fought soon after that, and he was on TV, and they were doing the post-fight interview. I can't remember who it was. He knocked the shit out of somebody. And
are you going to talk about when he called out Golden Boy, when he called him out, when he was talking about fighting De La Hoya?
Well, you know, he wasn't talking about De La Hoya, but he was talking about loyalty. And out of nowhere, he just said, you know, Top Rank's my promoter, and they've always been good to me, you know, and I'm very loyal to Bob Arum. And it was just kind of this random rant about loyalty, him and Bob Arum, and what that meant. And I always just found him to be something of an enigma. You know, even him leaving, you know, and coming back, he doesn't seem like he needs the money, you know. Both
right.
guys have seen him. He's got, you know, nice clothes on, and he seems to have all his faculties. Even it was like, I asked him if the game had slowed down for him, and he thought I was calling him slow and kind of took exception at it. You know, he's a pretty sharp guy.
Right.
To me, I'm wondering, and the thing I'm wondering is if he can beat Matisse, where does he go from here? Where is this heading, you know?
Well, we've had him on Leaving the Ring, and this was when he was making his comeback, if you remember. And he was realistic, you know? He was really realistic. He said, listen, I'm not going to be on the top of my game until I fight a particular fight, and then I'm going to slowly build myself back up. But his goal was to fight Pacquiao again, he said. That was his main goal, because he felt that he was fighting out of a weight he didn't belong in anymore, that he didn't feel comfortable with anymore, and he didn't feel strong with anymore. And, you know, slowly but surely, he's been keeping up to what he's promised, and that's build himself back up into the rankings, into the hearts of the fight fans. You know, I mean, he's been there. Trust me, he's been in the hearts of fight fans, but building himself back up into the hearts of fight fans in belief, in the belief department, where now we're believing in him. We're not fully believing in him, but we're believing in him and enough to say, okay, you know what, dude? Yeah, you outsmarted us. I mean, he surely shut a lot of us up when we had said he had no chance. It was a dead man walking.
Oh, no. No, he really shut all of us up.
He
it
did.
It was kind of bizarre. But, yeah, I mean, I don't think he can beat Pacquiao. I hope it doesn't lead there, because I just don't see it. Even at a weight that he's comfortable at, even, you know, as smart as he is and as good as he is, I just don't see him beating him.
Well, not by fighting guys like Matisse and Madonna, you know what I mean? And speed-wise, we haven't seen Eric Morales fight anybody with a lot of speed, you know what I mean? And then add the 140, you know what I mean?
If he had come back and, like, knocked out Devin Alexander, who's, you know, no Manny Pacquiao, but, like, is a fast, you know, speedy southpaw guy, if he had knocked him out, I'd have been okay, you know, like, let's see this thing. But, yeah, he was taken to the limit by Marcos Maidana. And he's still not quite a favorite, in my opinion, against Lucas Matisse. You know, we'll see. You know, he'd have to beat the shit out of Matisse in, like, you know, Ricky Hatton-esque fashion. You know, the way Pacquiao did him, in order for me to think that he'd ever be competitive. I just don't see it. You know, I could be wrong, but Manny is kind of slowing down. But
right,
still, I just you know, all the benefits of the doubt aren't going to work.
Well, I like to see, you know what, regardless if Marquez, you know, wins or lose against Manny Pacquiao, I'd like to see Morales against Marquez at 140.
Yeah.
Depending on how Marquez looks, you know, or what. I mean, because there are still competitive fights. The thing that I like about what Morales is that he's staying competitive. He's fighting some of the top guys at 140. And you still got some up-and-comers in 140. But then you got some real factors in 140 that are still, you know, fighting. You know, Khan, Bradley, even, you know, Peterson, who got a great win over Victor Caio. You got guys out there that definitely can give Morales a run for his money and make money at the same time. I mean, if Morales is solely back for money-wise, which I don't believe, I think he's back because the guy really truly believes he hasn't done enough in his career to cement him into the books of boxing, which we could argue with him about that, you know. But I think in his heart of hearts, he thinks that, you know what, there's still something left. Like every fighter always feels there's still enough yarn to pull, you know. There's still enough leather to make for another bout. And I think that's where he's at in his point of his life. You know, he's like, you know what? I want to beat the odds. That's the challenge. It's no longer being a champion or holding the title. It's can I be champion again, and be champion in what a great fashion by beating the younger guys that at once said no, you couldn't do it. I mean, Ali did it. That's why he wanted to, you know, come back. You know, a lot of the greats have done that.
Yeah, I mean, and for people, you know, there's some people that are really upset about the WBC thing, but and they talk about the integrity of the sport and it's ruined. And you know, we had the Canelo thing where he basically took Fernando Vargas's record, which is kind of a bummer, you know, because Vargas fought kind of a tougher, you know, a much tougher, you know, actual 154 pounder to get his
right
belt. Although, you know, Yuri Boy Campos was pretty shop worn, but still, it was an impressive win. At the time, and now Canelo's kind of ruined that history because he fought, you know, a welterweight, Matthew Hatton, for that same belt. And now
exactly.
we're possibly Morales will get He'll be the Mexican to get the four, you know, belts in four weight classes. He'll do it first. One, I don't think he's going to do it. I kind of lean towards Matisse in this fight. But two, I almost kind of just look at the whole thing and, like, as dirty as this sport is, and, you know, I think we do have a steroid era that we don't even talk about. We do talk about it as kind of now with Manny Pacquiao, but I think we already went through it with Holyfield in the 80s,
mm-hmm.
a lot of those athletes. I just kind of look at the whole thing and, like, what integrity of the sport? When did the sport have integrity? I mean, I understand fighter safety and all those things. You know, I write about those things. But I mean, with the belts and the history, I mean, we don't have an asterisk next to the part that was run by the mob.
Let me tell you this. Before I lose my train of thought about this. Integrity of the sport. People, there's going to be a bare-knuckle fight this Friday in Arizona. There goes your integrity of the sport. I was trying to get Bobby Gunn on, man, and I dropped the ball. Me and Gabriel were supposed to interview him Monday. You remember that game?
And, yeah, I was at the – yeah.
And you know what? I've been getting these really bad migraine headaches. I think it's because of the heat, you know, and I've been outside a lot working. So I've been getting really bad headaches, so I didn't have a chance to call. We had it scheduled, I think it was like for 2 o'clock to talk to him, and I just didn't do it. I didn't do it Tuesday, didn't do it Wednesday, and I was telling Red at the last minute, which we always do here on Leaving the Ring. We do everything at the last minute. Hey, can you get him on? And he's texting me back. He's pissed off at me because they're like, dude, why didn't you tell me this before? You know, he's not answering. But there's a bare-knuckle fight that's happening that you can actually catch the stream, I believe. I think it's on the Will Be Blood Fight show site that you can still catch up with it. But that's happening. So the integrity, that just shows you what money can do. You know, what the commissioners, and it's just not the alphabet guys, too, but it's the commissioners, you know. And was I disappointed with the WBC? I don't – you know what? Disappointment, that's the wrong word for me. I say comical.
Yeah.
I say it's comical that Jose Suleiman writes a letter knowing that was a shitty move to do, but he's justifying it. He's justifying it by saying he's a champion in recess. I didn't strip him. No. I just kind of put him aside on the unemployment line, and I'm going to give it to two active fighters at the moment, you know, because – the stipulation and the rules that these guys put on pencil, and the reason I say that the WBC or any commissioner or any other organization puts their rules on these contracts on pencil, because it just seems to me, Gabriel, that they pull out that eraser. That big, you know, remember that big old eraser you used to have in elementary so you wouldn't lose the thing? They have that on their desk. So whenever they go, you know what? This rule is stupid. It's contradicting us because we can't get paid. So let's erase it. Let's erase that, and let's put another belt here, because Tim Bradley was – only way he could be stripped is that if he was inactive for 6 months, which it hasn't been 6 months. So we're going to now put a champion in recess. Let's put that in there and hyphen it and outline it, highlight it. He's a champion in recess, and then let's give it to something else so we can make money off. That's the truth. They're making money off of Lucas Matisse and Eric Morales. That's it. They see the opportunity, and they're going to do it. It's a joke.
I'm disappointed. You know, I don't know, about as disappointed as I am in my dad when he farts in public. You know, it's kind of just.
That's disappointment. I'd call that embarrassment.
It's just him. Yeah, I'm 38. I'm used to it now. It's just him. He does that occasionally. And you know, I'm not disappointed. I don't really, you know, expect anything else. The WBC is going to be they're going to be corrupt. You know, they're going to act that way. Mm-hmm. I guess more to me, it was like a clarity thing. Because remember, you know, Golden Boy and their whole, you know, we're going to change boxing and we're not going to act like Don King and Bob Arum.
Right.
And you know, they sung a different tune with Canelo. They sung a different tune now. I mean, I don't know. You know, to me, it's just, it reveals that, you know, you guys are promoters. And
exactly.
It's one thing to get in this business and say, I'm going to change it from the inside out, and I'm going to do things the right way. And it's another thing to be in this business and try to make money and actually realize that it is kind of impossible to change a sport that doesn't want to be changed, that likes it the way it is. You know, so they can sell this fight. I mean, and look at, you know, you're not, from what I'm understanding, it's not selling terribly, but Ortiz, Mayweather, you know, no one's announced a sellout either.
Right.
It's not, you know, so now they've got something better to sell. I mean, they had the Barrios fight, and they were going to try to dress that up as a title fight. I was more upset by that. But now with Matisse, it kind of makes sense. It's a good fight. It's kind of justice for both guys. I think Morales, with his career, yeah, I don't really have a huge problem with him fighting for a belt again, especially since he fought a guy that had a belt in his last fight and arguably beat him. It just is the way it is, you know. I think getting really upset about it, it's kind of pointless. But it is funny that Golden Boy is now just, you know, they're just, we knew this all along, but they didn't know it. But they're just another promoter. And maybe hopefully now they do know it. And just be clean about it. You don't have to reinvent the wheel for me to watch your fights. You know, you don't have to tell me that you're going to do it better than the last guy did it for me to like you. You know, just give me value for money. And this
exactly.
Card is value for money.
Exactly. You know, and you know what? I'm not defending Golden Boy or any other promoter, but when you're gung-ho about something in the beginning, you know, we've done, everybody's has done this one time or another in their lives. They're like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. Until you get into the midst of things and until you understand how to stack the cards together, then you get an understanding. And I think that's what it kind of boiled down to with Golden Boy, was that they had all these high praises of what they were going to do. You know, we're all about the fighters, and we're all about this, and we're all about that. We're not going to be – and they started putting names out there, dropping names of their competitors that and they're doing the same exact crap, but it makes them look worse because they unveiled the crap that everybody knew that these other promoters were doing. And it just makes them look more like shit, you know? It's like the way Bob Arum takes cracks at – other guys, at the same time, he's doing it double worse. You know what I mean? It just boils down to being very comical and how things are handled. You know, where we think that these guys should be a little smarter in what they do, because the fact is they are making thousands and millions of dollars off of guys like us that tune in and go to the fights and support these fighters. But you'd expect them to be a little bit more subtle. A little bit more clean in how they do things. But it just shows you that when it's operated by people, when people, you know, my humans, guess what? It's never going to be operated completely clean.
Well, and the thing is, too, and getting upset, by the time we hear about it, it's done. You know, like the Martinez, Chavez, you know, WBC and Top Rank thing recently, it was the same thing. You know, they kind of, it was a little bit different in that Martinez's people could have fought Zibic some other way. You know, the promoter could have put it some other way. But ultimately, there was really not a huge hell of a reason to take the guy's belts. Other than, you know, you can make probably more money supporting Chavez Jr., you know, because he's going to be on TV. He's going to get, you know, be on TV regularly defending your belt. Whereas Martinez maybe will fight two times a year. Younger guy's going to fight 3 to 4 times a year. I understand that, but ultimately, you know, you're going to have to catch it before. You know, it's going to take somebody investigating deep, catching how this actually happens, what kind of collusion goes on. So there's definitely collusion in both cases. To me, there was more collusion with a network, with the Martinez thing and the Chavez Jr. thing. You know, I thought HBO was more involved than they'd like us to know. And I think Top Rank was more in collusion with them than they'd like us to know about it. But it's still one of those things where you got to catch somebody with a smoking gun, handing somebody else a suitcase full of money and saying, this is what we're going to do.
Right.
You know, and at the same time, you know, you got to be honest. Tim Bradley did himself no favors by putting himself in this position. He could have had a fight. He didn't want the fight for his own reasons, whatever they may be, and whether you agree with him or not.
Right.
He decided not to fight. Had he fought, he'd still have his belt, and he wouldn't be in recess, you know?
No, definitely. So, and congratulations, though, to Tim Bradley, who just had his daughter, Jada Bradley, Saturday with his wife. So congratulations to that. But you're absolutely right, you know, going back with Tim Bradley, making the wrong moves. And like I said before, you know what? I agree with in his decision to an extent, because I also agree on what a lot of fight fans are saying. Two really quick about the whole Twitter. He did hear the show, and his take about that Twitter. He said, "I'm gonna." He goes, "Fight fans, don't worry. I'm gonna do one. I'm gonna have one for my next fight." You know, he's gonna have a Twitter. So, but the thing is, how much damage did it do to him with the fight fans? And right now, what we're seeing and what we're witnessing, that, you know, for every move, there's consequences. And with Bradley, you could see, was this a good move? Was this a bad move? Right now, what we're seeing, it's a bad move because you're having fans that he did have, they're just turning their backs on him. And it seems that there is more, a little bit more damage. And he's going to have to do damage control when he announces, when he gets back into the ring. But the other thing is that he's allowing other 140-pounders up there move up on that ladder to have that opportunity against Khan and to have the opportunity to say, well, I don't want to fight you for that amount of money.
Yeah,
and leaves him,
yeah.
And leaves him with no opponent, you know? Leaves him to go back and retrace the steps that he had to take in order to be in the position that he's in now. Those are the things that I think that promoters and fighters, you know, and anything, don't take time and look at. You know, a lot of times we react at a heated moment, and we shouldn't. And the consequences could be a little more damaging, or they can't. But that's the foul play that we decide to play with, and sometimes you get burned. What do we know? What do I know? Yeah. What do you know?
How much? It'll be interesting. I think winning cures everything. If Tim gets a fight and it's a good fight, everything will be forgiven. People will always kind of dog him for it. And you make decisions and you got to live with him. And he's going to have to live with this one. And we'll see where it takes him.
Yep.
I still don't think that when you're saying you're trying to build up a fight, the absolute way I know not to build up a fight is to not fight. You know, and there was no replacement fight, and maybe that's on his promoter, but I just think, you know, that was as good a deal as you're going to get for Amir Khan at that moment. I think he should have accepted that and just taken it, beaten the guy, get out of his contract, and move on from there. Maybe there's something I don't know. I tend to think there's other things that are not on the record that will come out later and why he's not wanting to fight ever again for Gary. But, you know, I'm also just taking kind of an educated guess on that. So we'll
right.
see. You know, I think the rebuilding process for him will be fine. You know, we'll see.
Well, fight fans, we're still waiting on and whether or not who we're going to have on next here on Leave the Rings.
Josecito Lopez is going to – we're going to call him in at 7:30. They just texted me.
Fantastic. So 7:30, Josecito Lopez will be talking to us here on Leave the Ring, talking to us a little bit about his fight on September 17th, which we had on – earlier, Jesse Vargas, his opponent, the man that he's going to be facing on the undercard of Victor Ortiz and Floyd Mayweather Jr. Great fight. This card is being stacked up to be fantastic. I can't wait for it. You know, really quick, I want to do the fight schedule, man. I think we should get into that whole fight
okay.
schedule. And
we
then,
haven't gotten into the Kelly Pavlik thing yet.
No, and you know what, though, that I also want to talk about the solo boxeo. I don't know if you had a chance to check out El Mexicano Negro, that kid for Let's Get It On Promotions, the Lane Brothers, who's under that banner. And the middleweight, what's his name? What's that guy's name? It's a weird
name. So Lonnie Smith?
No, not Lonnie Smith. Oh, yeah, Lonnie Smith. But I'm talking about the main event. The main event who Sean Pascal went out there to go see. God, I just went blank again.
Yeah, you just made me go blank, actually.
Huh?
Then you just made me go blank.
Oh, God. You know, I'm talking about the, God, what's his name? I've seen him at the Tachi Palace numerous times. He used to be with Goose and Tudor. Now he's with Golden Boy.
Yeah.
Help me out, guys.
Oh, you're talking about Babu Shumanov.
Yeah, Shumanov. There you go. God. Yeah. And talk a little bit about him. I mean, you know what? Pascal was talking about, there's talk about Cloud and him going in and facing each other. But, you know, Pascal was out there checking out Shumanov in his fight. And Shumanov, we picked him to win that fight there. real mechanical, really slow. But I got to tell you here, Gabe, is that even though he doesn't really spark a whole lot of excitement, he's a really durable guy. He's a strong, and I said middleweight. Why did I say middleweight? A light heavyweight. He's a really strong,
yeah,
light heavyweight guy. You know, he's not that typical guy that has all the gifts in the world. He has to use everything that is available to him. And I just wouldn't be opposed to seeing him get in the ring with any of the guys. I'd like to see him in with Cloud. I'd like to see him in with Pascal. You know, Chad has got his day with Bernard Hopkins. But Shumov, and a lot of them, for some reason, I think he's going to win a lot of fans just because of his workmanship.
I'm on the fence with him. I just don't know what the upside is. I mean, I don't understand why they moved him to a belt so fast. You know, it seems like that's going to really kind of hurt his development. You know, because, you know, when you have a belt, you're pretty much now a TV fighter, and you're going to have to you kind of become a slave to that because you get used to those kind of paychecks. I mean, let's see, you know, how active they want to keep him. And he actually kind of co-promotes himself. I believe him and his brother have like a promotional company.
Right.
I'm still not that sold on him. I just think he's so raw. I don't understand why they went the route of, just building him up over some time, you know, seasoning the guy. Because he's definitely got good physique. He's very strong, decent punches and everything. But there's a lot of rough edges to him for a guy that
has
a belt.
I don't think those rough edges are going to go away either, though. I got to tell you that. I think what you see is what you're going to get from Shumov. Completely.
He reminds me of a giant Kid Diamond. You know, he's just kind of rough, you know. And when he gets in close, he's going to grab onto you, and it's going to be kind of rough and tumble, and the head clashes and stuff. I don't know. I don't find him aesthetically pleasing, personally, watching him. I just don't.
Well, I just told you, like I said, he's not an exciting guy. I don't find him exciting. I thought it was a boring fight. But I'm sitting there, and I'm like, you know what? This is a guy that could take a punch, very strong, big boy at a light heavyweight. And really, he's going to be one of those real durable contenders. Not a champion, but a contender to give champions a run for their not a run for their money. I don't want to use that word because I don't think so. But a good fight, you know, because he's going to be there to fight, you know.
I'd see him against Edison Miranda at 147 or 175.
Oh yeah,
why not?
That would be a good fight.
I think Despain, you know, I don't know if they'd go right to a title shot or if they're going to kind of rebuild him a little bit more. But,
or just Spain to go to Shumilov, you know what I mean? I mean, I don't think he's going to go up Miranda.
No.
Miranda right now to me is just the guy that needs to figure out what's going to happen next. I think they're going to fight for that Despain rematch or something. You know what I mean? I haven't heard a whole lot, and you know what? We should contact them just to kind of hear what their thoughts about what they're going to do next. But
I think they're going to keep doing what they've been doing, which is wait around for another fight, you know.
Right,
and
right.
Hope to be on TV, you know. But I think if you're Despain, I think they move past that fight. You know?
Yeah, and they should go after Shumov. Yeah, I think they should. I think that would be a good fight because Despain is quicker. He's got better footwork. He's a big kid as well in the light heavyweight division. And that would be a good name under his ledger if he could pull it off.
Yeah. I just wonder if Despain, you know, because he just had that loss. And he's only, you know, he's a pretty young fighter himself in terms of the amount of fights he's got. I wonder if they just keep rebuilding or if they'd go for that. Because also, I don't think he'd be in line for a title shot. I mean, he's only like 9-1 or something like that. He's got less than 10, or he's had like 10 fights. So I kind of wonder. That's the thing with Shumanov, though. It's like, you know, Shumanov's probably got just as many fights.
Yeah. No, I think he's got a little bit more. He's got more than that. If I remember correctly, he's kind of up there.
He's only 12-1.
Oh, is he? Wow. See. Huh.
Yeah.
For some reason I was thinking like 18, 19, or even 20 already. But no. Wow.
And he's weird. He's 27 years old, and he's got this belt. You know, WBA. It's a real belt. You know, I mean, kind of the way he got it wasn't exactly real, but. That's what's weird about him. You know, he's such a young fighter. I mean, shit, he just fought William Joppy. I didn't realize that. You know, he's just kind of this raw prospect with the belt. And I don't know. I don't know where you take him. And I wonder who even is mandatory at this point. You know, he's to me, I just think he's kind of a built-up guy. And I don't really know what to say about him or what to do with him. You know,
right.
I don't personally like watching him. So, like, Steve and I talked about this on Next Round. It was the same thing. I was just kind of like, well, he's got a belt. He's kind of rough around the edges. And the edges that aren't rough are not very entertaining. So, you know, we have a lot to say about the guy. It's like, well, let me know when he's fighting next, you know.
That's the whole thing. Like I said, you know, he's not the most entertaining or exciting guy out there, but I think if I'm just looking at it as an opponent wise, where he's going to bring, he does, you know what? This is the thing I look at is he doesn't impose a major threat, but he does oppose a good fight. Why? Because he's strong. He takes a good punch and he does come to fight. He will fight you. And if champions out there or guys that want to be champions really want to try to test themselves, I think Shugunov is a great test. He's a good name to test yourself in will and in boxing skill. I don't know. I could be wrong. I don't even know why we're stuck on this subject here so long. We need to go with that fight schedule. Lonnie Smith, man, you got to move that head, brother. You got to move that head. Too many hits. Got a lot of heart. And you were throwing some great uppercuts, but, man, you were taking a lot of shots on that head.
Yeah, a lot of shots.
Too many shots.
Yeah,
you know?
Way too many shots.
I mean,
I thought he was good, you know. He's got some things to him, but man, yeah. When you're seeing a guy that young already taking that much damage, that's a problem.
Yeah.
All right,
you know,
here we go.
Go ahead. No. Go
okay.
For it.
At the this is Friday night at the Chumash Casino in Santa Ynez, California, on ESPN2's Friday Night Fights. We have Vernon Parris, 24-0, versus Tim Coleman, 19-1-1. Underneath that, we have Cristobal Cruz, 39-12-2, versus Art Hovhannisson, 14-0-1, and Ramon Morales, 5-0, versus Isaac Hidalgo, 8-7-2. At the Melbourne Pavilion in Flemington, Australia, Lenny Zappa, 25-1, versus Ahmed Diaz, 29-1. This is actually a good fight. And Brad Pitt, 8-0, is taking on Eduardo Rojas, 24-14-7.
The actor?
I hope so. Saturday night at the Covelli Center in Youngstown, Ohio. Oh, wait a minute. He pulled out of that fight.
Yeah.
Got the Polo Deportivo Vargas and La Guerra, Venezuela. Miguel Acosta, 28-4-2 versus the dreaded TBA. Underneath that, actually, there's girl fights. Katie Castillo, 14-0 versus Obladis Suarez, 15-2-1. And at the Sports Center in Boff in Germany, Michael Gervont, 55-4-1 versus the dreaded TBA. Man, it is grim for fights this weekend.
It is, man. I don't even know what to... You know, the only thing that's going pretty good is, I believe, this Sunday, Golden Boy and Fun Match Ring Card Girls are having a competition in San Jose, you know, for the Ring Card Girls for the Marcos Madonna and Guerrero fight at the HB Pavilion and for, you know.
Are you a
judge? Actually, you know what's funny? Yeah, they asked me to be. They asked me to be a judge. I haven't got back to them yet because I'm not sure
Dave,
if I'm going to be able to head out there. I want to be a judge. You know what I mean?
Dave, that's not one you wait till the last minute to do. Call them back right now. I'll wait.
I will call them back. Actually, I'll text them right now and let them know. You know, and that should be a pretty fun thing. I mean, if you're up in San Jose, California, or you're even nearby, you know, Salinas, Hollister, Gilroy, Sunnyvale, San Francisco, Sacramento, Manteca, or even Modesto, take a drive out there. The information is up on the Living Ring website. I don't have it in front of me, but it's up on the Living Ring website, so be sure to go check it out. If you have some time, go out there and be a judge yourself. I should be out there. I'm not sure yet. I'm going to check it out.
I'm an excellent judge of Ring Card Girls.
Are you?
This Friday, yes, I am. At the Chumash Casino, this Vernon Perez versus Tim Coleman fight is going to be fun. These two guys do not like each other at all. I did an article today on Tim Coleman.
Uh-huh.
And, well, he had some things to say. I mean, apparently, you know, they were supposed to fight on the undercard of Alexander and Bradley. Fight didn't happen for whatever reason. And Perez basically started talking a lot of trash, saying this guy's out of my league and this and that. And basically they just kind of went back and forth. I guess Perez went on Coleman's Facebook and put a bunch of nasty comments, got all angry. And that was his
own. Really?
Guys, they just absolutely want to kill each other. I'm sure the weigh-in today was really fun. I'm going to try to get a hold of Mr. Coleman, see if we can pull him into the show. Weigh-in days are always kind of tough to get a hold of these guys.
Right.
But, just check out the article. There was actually a couple of things that I couldn't verify, so I didn't print that he said. Maybe he'll say on the radio. This is definitely going to be bad blood. I don't know if you've seen either of these guys. They're actually trained by both Mayweathers. Perez is trained by Floyd Sr.
Senior, right.
Tim is trained by Roger.
Senior.
But Senior's not with Perez anymore. Apparently, according to Coleman, he's left the camp because Perez wasn't in the kind of shape that he was supposed to be in. So it's going to be interesting. I'm picking Coleman in this. At first, I was leaning towards Perez just off skill set. But the more Coleman talked about certain things, the more I was like, I'm not picking Vernon Perez.
I've seen both guys. You know, the thing I like about Perez is that he does bring a little bit more pop than Coleman, you know. I don't know, man. This is a pretty tough matchup here. I mean, if you kind of look at them, could you say they're familiar with each other? I mean, in your article, it seemed like they were.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they know who each other are. They've watched each other train.
Exactly.
But I think, apparently, you know, Coleman's been suspended twice, three times. He's had decisions overturned and made no contest, apparently because of drug use. Coleman said it was crack. I couldn't verify that it was crack, so I couldn't write that it was crack, but that's what he was saying.
Wait. So who was busted for crack? Tested
apparently
for crack?
Vernon Perez. Well, but I don't know if that it was crack. It just said that he failed drug tests, and so they overturned the decision. Didn't say what it was. I wasn't able to find out before I went to print. If anybody knows about the crack, then give me a call. But
when was that, though? I mean, that was like back in 2008, though, right? When they overturned
right.
that? Inconclusive.
Yeah, there were two decisions, I think, in a row back in 2008. But, I mean, the kid's young. He's only like 23, you know?
Right.
And, I don't know, as Coleman said, it was like, you know, people don't usually stop doing drugs. his contention was maybe he was still smoking crack. But,
wow.
You know, I don't know. Tarver smoked some crack in his day, you know, and he still came back okay. So we'll see. You know, I think it's physically, like, it's a great matchup. You know, and style-wise, I think they'll really play to each other's strengths. But then you add in this thing, they just don't really like each other, like, at all. It's become very personal. Like, Tim was just straight up like, you know, this isn't even about winning. I just want to hurt this guy as much as possible.
Right.
So I think it's going to be a good fight. It may not make up for not seeing Kelly Pavlik, but, you know, what will, really? There's a hole in my heart for Pavlik that it'll never be filled.
Well, I mean, when you're accusing of a guy of taking crack and you're saying this is the reason why, I mean, I think, yeah, I would say there's going to be some bad blood there. You know what I mean? But, you know, Perez, though, he's got some pretty good names on his ledger here where he's defeated. You know, so it's a good matchup. You know, Perez hasn't lost. He lost by drug test, but he hasn't lost by an opponent. You know what I mean? Emmanuel Augustus was the last guy he stepped into the ring with. Where Tim Coleman, he's his last opponent was Sergio Rivera and Patrick Lopez. But going to Emmanuel Augustus, I mean, it's Emmanuel Augustus. You know what I mean? A guy that should have. Yeah, you know what I mean. It's so hard to judge of who's going to really. I like this fight. I do like this fight a lot.
Though, I think that Augustus was pretty done.
when Vernon Perez faced him. And he went the distance. Granted, that's going to be a guy that's going to be hard to stop, I think, until the day he dies. But I look at Tim Coleman's record, and that Patrick Lopez win I thought was really big for him. You know, him throwing that right uppercut. Did you see that?
No, I didn't.
Talking in the background. Yeah, sorry. Somebody started talking in the background. I'm like, what the hell? I had to move.
I'm not in my normal location. I don't think I did see that Patrick Lopez fight. I'm going to have to go back and check that out. I don't have a definite who I'm going to pick in this one, unfortunately.
Coleman, he finished it. And he said in the interview that he looked at the fight, he looked at Lopez, and didn't look at the tape long, but they kind of devised a game plan based off the look that he got. And he knew it was going to be a right rear uppercut. And, man, it's one of the best punches of that year. It just lays him out with one shot, and Lopez gets up, but he kind of stumbles around and is pretty much just done off this one shot. And Coleman, you know, looking at tape, there are times when he doesn't throw. He's like too much of a Mayweather fighter. He doesn't throw any punches. He's looking for that perfect punch.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also kind of an interesting guy in that he debuted at like 139 pounds, and he's only 5'7". He's not a very big guy, but he's fought as high as like 151, I think 153 maybe. He's been all over the map, you know. He's only been fighting at 140 consistently for like, I think this will be his fourth fight. Everything in between has been.
He
like
went all the way up to 157. You know
oh,
what
wow.
I mean?
He's just been up there. I'll fight anybody, any time. He hasn't really had a promoter or anybody that's really taken care of him, and now he's kind of got this shot And he feels like he's only got like five knockouts, but he's like, look at the guys I've been facing. They're all
right.
Gigantic. In fight night, they're huge, you know, compared to me. And I'll also come in, you know, pretty much close to what I weighed in on that same, you know, on come fight night. So he thinks he's more of a boxer puncher, even without the knockouts. And then at 140, it's kind of showing that he is a bit of a puncher. Patrick Lopez isn't easy to get out of there, much less with one shot. So we'll see. I think there's consistency with him. For one, you know, his trainer hasn't left his camp.
Well, this is the thing, though. For this, what works out for Tim Coleman here is that, you know, Vernon Perez, man, is actually the smaller guy coming into this fight, because his whole career he has stayed at the junior welterweight division, or he actually debuted as a lightweight. You know what I mean? He's never really went above where Coleman has. He's fluctuated. He's been all the way to 157 to 150. He just finally started kind of finding his place in 2009. He's been consistent and stayed at 140. Along those lines of being at 140.
That's the key. I think consistency is always key. You know,
right.
And look at in such a short career how up and down Perez has been. I mean, multiple suspensions for drug use, really? You know,
yeah.
And I mean, I guess the Augustus fight is a bit of a step up, but to me, I think he's got like the tools, but this game is also equally mental, and I don't think that mentally he may be there. We'll see. It's going to be on, though. I mean, I just think I haven't been able to find anything out about the weigh-in or anything. There's no press release or anything about it, so I don't know if anything went down, but I wouldn't be surprised. Coleman was pissed. He was really pissed.
I bet so, man. You know, saying that, you know, I got.
But it was funny. He was like laid back about it. You know, he's from Maryland, but he grew up in Las Vegas. He moved there when he was 13, and he just kind of got this kind of laid back. It almost sounds like he's from California, the way he talks. And it was really funny. Just this, like. And casually, like, I think he's still on crack. Like, wait a minute, what?
Wow.
Yeah, but again, I was like, I didn't really print it. I mean, I can mention it, I guess, because he did say it, and he was fine with it being on the record. He actually told me, and this is on the record, but putting it in print was a little dangerous, I thought, just because I couldn't confirm it.
Hmm.
We're getting close to me calling Josecito. They're still in the gym right now, so they're kind of finishing up. They start training over there and Riverside around 5 o'clock and go for about an hour and a half. But Henry said to just give him a call in a little bit.
You know,
the Pavlik thing, I'm curious what you think about the Pavlik thing.
I don't know, man. Honestly, I got to be truthful with you. I'm not really sure. I was reading up on it, which was a great article that Alec did, right? And I'm just sitting back and I'm thinking, I got to read it again. I don't know about you, but I normally have to read something maybe 2 to 3 times and then really make my assessment of it. I only read it once. But there's some things in there that he said where, you know, I'm just like, okay. But then there's other things that you got to kind of dig a little bit deeper about of what he said. You know, the whole money situation, you know, he said it's been done. It was, you know, the thing that caught my eye and my ear at the same time, he said that the Top Rank and Cameron Duncan normally don't tell him how much he's going to make until like maybe a week or 2 weeks. Till fight time, you know, and he says, I'm just kind of tired of that, you know, and I'm tired of this. And he did make a pretty good case about himself thinking about that he's a bigger draw than Kessler, you know, and that he should be money wise should be equal. But his trainer, too, was saying, look, we weren't thinking that we were going to get $3 million. But, you know, they just wanted a little bit more for that Butte insurance. So. And I know some people were saying this is what happens to HBO for overpaying their fighters. But really, I mean, let's remember that this guy really fought the right way to become a middleweight champion. And he was middleweight champion. And he was drawing a big crowd. So is it ridiculous that he's asking for a particular amount? Or he's asking for a certain amount of notice before he makes a decision? And I don't know, Gabe, I kind of agree with them, you know what I mean? But there's always two sides to a coin.
It was kind of the thing, I almost said it to Jesse Vargas when he was on. And he was saying Morales gave me some really good advice, you know, about my career in boxing. And I was thinking, it made me think of like the, you know, the rules of boxing Customato always had. It was like 3 rules. One was in a combination, always come back with a hook because it leaves you in position to throw anything else. Two was, if you get knocked down, take the 8 count. Don't be a hero and try to get back to your feet. Just take the 8 count, regroup, and go on. And the third thing was handle your own money. And to me, you know, a boxer is a business. They remind me a lot of the acting business because every actor is their own business. And you can hire people to handle your business, like a manager or agent or whatever, but at the end of the day, you're your own business. And you should monitor, you should be knowing how much you're being paid for the job that you're being hired to do on Saturday.
Right.
You should probably know that, you know, before training camp and all the expenses that you've accrued for that. And certainly, you know, after all the interviews that you've done and you're heading into the final week of camp, you should probably know before that. And that's, you know, you can say Cameron didn't do this or this guy didn't do that. Or at the end of the day, who's driving your boat? You are. And I just think it was – I can understand him, and I even kind of wondered with the Butte fight, are they just cashing this guy out? Because there's no way is he ready for that fight. And I don't think he ever will be. I don't think it's a good style matchup. And it seemed out of character for Top Rank to kind of not matchmake their guy well. But then you look at, you know, him saying I should be getting more than Kessler. He's not a bigger draw than Kessler. I'm sorry. Certainly not in his – if you compare the way ticket sales were going in Youngstown this week – versus if Mikhail Kessler announced a fight in his hometown and decided, or it's him in his home country even, I think he would outdraw Telly Pavlik tenfold right at this moment. Not talking about who you were in the past or who you might be in the future, but who you are right now. Kessler's a bigger draw, just flat out. I think Kelly's overestimating himself, and I hate to use the word delusional because that means he sounds crazy, and I don't think he is. But to me, it's just, you're saying the $1.1 million is a bad deal. It's
right.
You ignoring like your recent history, which is you haven't fought in over a year and a half. And this is a what have you done for me lately business.
And you've been dropping
lately,
out. Right.
Yeah. And then you didn't
not ignoring
Lopez fight. Yeah.
And I think he's ignoring the troublesome that he's been bringing to fight camp, you know, is alcoholism and other things. There's other factors, you know. And that's why I said, you know what, I haven't really made – my feelings on it, I'm not really sure because I think there's going to be more stuff on that topic that's going to be dished out. You know what I mean?
It's kind of it's my least favorite kind of sports media is talking about what some business decision that somebody else made. I'm not in his shoes, so I don't really know. If it was me, you know, I don't even know if I would be aware enough of reality to say, you know what, I've kind of killed my marketability. You know, and not only that, but like this decision, like Jack Lowe was telling him, just take this fight and we'll worry about Boutte later. And Kelly's response was no. You know, and because he not only like pissed off, you know, Top Rank and Showtime and everybody that was building towards this fight, but it was in his hometown. He lived
there.
Anybody that did buy tickets.
Didn't even think about that one.
I'm fucking done with this guy, you know? And when you alienate your own hometown, that's a major problem, you know? I mean, there's guys like Tim Bradley would kill to be able to sell as many tickets as Kelly Poplick could in his hometown. And he did, you know? And so, well, actually, the way sales were going, he was about Tim Bradley level right now.
What he was talking about, you know, the thing that he was funny that I was kind of noticing that he was talking about was he was talking about how his business is all over the internet. Or it's just out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Public guy. And you know, and how he, you know, that to an extent, that was an effect, you know, to himself. Well, if you thought that was an effect, like the alcoholism, going to rehab, the hand issue, not following through with fights with, you know, with Paul Williams at the time, the loss of Sergio Martinez, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And you were having a problem showing your face around Youngstown. What do you think is going to happen now?
That's the thing. Like Linus just tweeted at me, you don't back out of a hometown fight. He was like, you know, it's just straight up. And here's the thing. Like Kelly says, my business is out there. Well, you know, welcome to being on a big stage. You wanted this. You know, you wanted to be middleweight champion of the world. And those things come with it. You know, good or bad, those things come with it. And here's the thing, you know, I can understand what he's saying because, you know, let's say somebody judges you on how you are on the radio and whatever videos you come out. That's all they know of you. And so they,
why? Did somebody say something? Somebody say something? Because if they did, I'm going to handle them right now.
Yeah. All the time. But there's that point of view of you or of him. We know him from incidents, from his hand injury. We know him from his fights. But right now, all we know is incidents, you know, rehab, pulling out of fights, and the way he looked in his last fight. The only way to erase that for him is to fight.
Right.
And to do well in his fights and slowly change our point of view of him. That's the only way. This isn't the way to do it. And this idea that waiting around is sort of like what Tim Bradley did. I want to wait around for the big fights. In the meantime, I'm not going to fight at all, and I'm not going to increase my marketability by doing the thing that I'm known for.
It's worse for him because he has those that history. He has that problem where Timothy Bradley is more of like a shock for the rest of us. You know what I mean? You know, when he decided to go a champion in recess, you know. And it's not that damaging because he doesn't have that troubled past, you know, that we've been following. Where Kelly's is just like, you know what, to a point where you just go, you know what? You throw your hands up in the air and say, "Screw it, buddy."
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
when you want to fight, let me know. Because ultimately, we don't fight fans and fight people are fickle. We love you when you're fighting.
We really love you
when you're winning. Oh, here's Tim Coleman. All right, let me grab him.
Yeah, man, fight fans. If you want to call in right now, talk to us a little bit about Kelly Pavlik's position and what he did pulling out of his hometown fight. Let us know what your thoughts are, you can.
And I'm back. Okay. I'm here with junior welterweight contender who's going to fight on Friday Night Fights against Vernon Parris, Mr. Tim Coleman. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Hey, how's it going, boss?
Hey,
great.
Tim, how you doing, brother?
My co-host. This is Dave Duenas here with me.
Hey, what's going on?
How you doing, brother?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm over at the casino. You know, we just sat down to eat after the weigh-in, so I'm feeling great.
So,
how'd the weigh-in go?
Yeah, we want to know how the weigh-in went, bro. You know, we're talking about the build-up and the you know, kind of the not liking of each other, and we're all wondering, how did the weigh-in go? Was there some talk? Was there some scuffle? Or was it just...
Well, I mean I'm going to be honest with you guys, man. I got kicked out of the Chumash Hotel because I saw him in the lobby, and he had some nasty stuff to say, so I tried to punch him in the mouth. And my friend Raymond Zabetti grabbed me before I could do it. And the casino manager really wasn't having none of that. So they kicked me out, and I'm staying over at the Pete Soup Hotel about 20 miles down the road.
Oh,
wow.
Man. Hey, so you weren't able to, you know, I mean, did you throw a punch or?
Yeah, I thought every time I get in swinging range of Vernon Paris fight for the rest of my life, I'm going to throw a punch. After the fight, if I see him after the fight, after I beat his ass, throw a punch if he gets within swinging range.
Tell us a little bit.
Yeah, go ahead, Dave. Go ahead.
Dave, tell us a little bit. I mean, what happened? What's the story? I mean, why is there so much animosity between you two?
Man, listen. I mean, to be honest with you, man. Like me and him were supposed to fight on a Devin Alexander and Tim Bradley undercard, and I received the shoulder. So he started telling people that I was a coward. You know what I mean? And, you know, if I was a coward, I wouldn't box, because this is not a game where you can have a lot of fear. You know what I mean? So really any fear. And he started making some, you know, some comments back and forth, which I really think it was his ghetto-ass manager. But, you know, he made some comments on Facebook. He called me the Facebook queen because that's all I do. He said it's going on Facebook. Well, I mean, I train and I sit in the house. And, yeah, and I do go on Facebook all fucking day. But, I mean, this guy's just a real jerk, man. He said some real nasty stuff on my Facebook page, and, you know, I got a lot of children on my page, man. So I try to be the best kind of role model that I could be. And it just spent from there. And I told him, I said, every time I see you, I'm a bomb on you. And I saw him, so I swung on him. You know, I'm a man of my word, and I promise you, every time I see him the rest of my life, I'm going to try to kick him in the nuts.
Oh, man. Now you...
That's Dave and I have the same agreement. Every time I see him, that's why we do the show in two different places. Every time I see him, I have to try to kick him in the nuts.
And every time I see him, Tim, at his house in the lobby, I throw a punch at him. You know, we're just not as accurate as you guys.
Did you guys know this guy has 3 no contests? Actually, 4 no contests on his record for doing drugs. Man, that's tripped out, man. You know, got suspended for smoking crack cocaine, and then got suspended again for smoking marijuana, and then got suspended again for smoking marijuana, and then got suspended again for smoking crack again. Like, man, this kid doesn't know what the hell he wants to do with his life, man. And, you know, I think he has his old trainer or old coach back in his corner again, you know, because Floyd Sr. refused to come up here because, you know, he said he has no tolerance for out-of-shape fighters. And he said there's got to be something more going on with him than just the training, because, I mean, he does the training regimen that they do, but he quits all the time in the gym. He got dropped by amateur kid named Kevin Newman. You know, he got folded up a couple times by these Eastern European cats that train with Dewey Cooper. Man, I mean, this kid just sucks, man, all the way around the board. Man, he shows a big lack of heart. I mean, you know, he's fought no reputable opponents who weren't over the age of 35 or 36, you know what I'm saying? So, I mean, people talk about, oh, you don't have that much knockout power, but I fought at heavier weight classes, and, you know, this kid's for 125-pounders coming up to 140. You know what I mean? Never really a real junior welterweight opponent.
Is that refreshing for yourself? I mean, knowing, because I was looking at your record, and I didn't even notice. I was like, man, you fought at 157 and a quarter pound, and that,
man,
you're actually going in this time as the bigger guy, because Paris is always fought at a lower weight class.
Hey, but you know something? He was seriously struggling to make weight. Let me tell you guys, man, I woke up yesterday, and I ate like crazy because I'm really nervous about flying. And when I got to layover, guess what I did? I went straight to Quiznos. I got 2 sandwiches because when I get nervous, I eat, man. And so I ate 2 sandwiches. I had a milkshake, you know what I mean? I went back to the bar, got a big glass of cranberry juice. Man, I ate pretty good, and I got here, and I was only 3 pounds overweight. You know what I mean? And
wow.
I just waited to probably an hour and a half before the weigh-ins to even try to get it off. You know what I'm saying? And he's been running. He ran 3 times yesterday. You know what I mean? He sat in the sauna today. I sat in the sauna to lose a quarter of a pound. You know what I mean? I pretty much could have came under, really, but after I got out of the sauna, man, I couldn't help it. I drunk a whole glass of apple juice, and you know, I still came in that weight. I think he's going to be pretty weak. He looks sick as hell. I think it might be all crack he was smoking when he was in Vegas. I don't know. You guys got to tell me.
So, Tim, is this going to be a boxing match or is this going to be a street fight in the ring? Is that what we're...
Have you guys ever watched that show, The Bully Beatdown, on MTV? That's exactly what it's going to be, man. I'm going to whip his ass. You know, I couldn't describe it any other way or put it any other way. This is going to be a beatdown. You know what I mean? Roger had a game plan, and he just beat the shit out of him. He's like, just walking in, he's like, don't aim for his head. He's like, aim for his body, his arms, his hips, his back. And that's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm going to hit him everywhere but the face. And around about the fifth or sixth round, I'm going to start dropping headshots on him. And when I drop those headshots, his punk ass is going to quit. Or he's going to try to start fouling, and he's going to do something because he's going to be feeling more pressure than he ever felt in his whole goddamn life. And he's going to be hitting me like, damn, what the hell is going on? Well, what's going on is that you've been fighting guys at a lighter weight the whole life. That's what's been going on.
Oh, man.
I can't wait to see this fight. Yeah, I'm excited, man. So
if God blesses him, and by some chance, and I believe there's no way in hell, but if he gives him a win, I'm going to release the tapes of him smoking crack. I got him on my phone. You know, his ex-girlfriend emailed him to me, man. It's funny as hell, man. He had some basketball shorts on, dress socks, and some dress shoes, man. And she goes from him to the crack pipe, from him to the crack pipe. He tore our house up, man, and he goes from him to the crack pipe. Man, he's a weird guy, man.
Wow. Oh, man, that's terrible.
That's,
I mean, his
his ex-girlfriend, yeah. That's my baby now. I forgot to tell you guys too, man. And she's a really good chick, man. I can't believe that she was even with him for 4 months, man. She said that's all she could take because he's a little asshole, man. He never really made any real money in boxing, and he never wanted to work a job, so he lived with her, man. He's just a jacked up person all around. And you know, normally I wouldn't bring up all his faults, but you know, since he chose to say all that bullshit about me and all those other stupid interviews, you know, I just had to come as hard as I possibly could with it.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
You know, at the end of the day, that's it. But, you know, I'm going to let my hands do a lot of talking in the ring. I'm going to beat his ass.
Hey, you have an interesting background. We talked about your early days and how you grew up in the gym. Tell us about that, you know, when you got to Vegas when you were, like, 13. And how you got into boxing.
Oh, yeah, man. My dad's a journeyman electrician. You know what I mean? He's with the IBW. So, he went to Vegas on a pool tournament one time, and he discovered that there was a lot of work there, man. At the time, there was no work in Baltimore, so he went out there for about a year before I did. You know, I was living with my grandmother. She found out she had cancer, so I moved to Vegas. And, you know what I mean? Like, I was pretty much a screw-up as a kid, man. But, you know, my dad took me to the boxing gym because a friend of his knew Floyd, and with the Nevada Partners Boxing Gym, man. And that was probably the best gym I've ever been in my life. You know, so many world champions came through there. But when I walked through those doors, man, probably for the first year of boxing, I was what they call the moving target, man. You know what I mean? All those Mexican kids used to just kick my ass. And then finally after a year, I got a fight. You know, took 10 losses straight. You know what I mean? Won, like, 12 straight. Took 10 more losses straight. You know what I mean? Like, but, you know, I lived, ate, and slept boxing. When I was a kid, you know, besides hanging out on the street, boxing was the only thing I wanted to do. And, you know, it's the only thing I've been doing for pretty much my whole life since then.
You watched, you named off a bunch of guys, like Holyfield came through there, Lennox Lewis came through there, Tyson came through there.
Lennox Lewis, I mean, you got Zab Judah, Lennox Lewis, Floyd trained there, Steve Forbes was there. You know what I mean? If you name a guy, man, he went through Nevada Partners when that gym was open because that was the gym that everybody came to train at. You know, Mike Tyson used to always come talk to us as kids. I mean, the who's who of boxing came through that gym, man. If they came into town to train for a fight, they were at Nevada Partners Boxing Gym.
And that's pretty much where you learn what it's like to train and be a professional. Yeah.
Of course. This is all I do. If you name it, I was in there with them. I mean, everybody, man.
And you've traveled all over the world sparring, too. You've been in Ricky Hatton's camp. You said you were in Germany for a period of time. You think that's really the difference here is you've got world-class experience, even if it's just sparring, but you've been exposed to that level and you responded to it by adopting some of their work ethic, whereas the guy you're facing hasn't.
Especially with the Hatton camp, man. You know, I was out there with Lee Beard for a while. You know, he's an excellent condition coach, man. I got a chance to go to Puerto Rico with Oscar to get ready for the Steve Forbes fight. And, You know what I mean? I went through Mayfield in California to box with Angulo a couple times, man. You know, I spent a lot of time in Freddie Roach's gym getting ready for fights, man. If you name it, I've been there, I've done it. You know what I'm saying? Like, boxing is what I love and is what I do for a living, man.
So knockout or just or long, drawn-out decision?
How are we doing here? Most likely a knockout. You know, to be honest with you guys, I mean, I couldn't say go no other way or I'll stop him. You know, I mean, I don't want to go another way. I'm going to try to impose my will on him the whole fight.
At 140 is pretty much your weight class at this point, right? You're going to settle in here. There's a lot of good names, a lot of good people you can beat. Or you certainly
hey, man,
can
you know, don't count 147 pounds out, though. If a fight arises, and I think it's a good fight, you know, me and my team sit down and talk about it, man, I'll fight at 47. You know what I mean? If the money comes up at 135, I'll move down there, too.
Well, I can't wait for this fight, man. I appreciate you calling in. I know weight day is always a tough day, although it sounds like you've just been eating nonstop heading into weight day.
Actually, I'm eating as we're speaking right now. We're in a restaurant.
Well, you enjoy your meal, man, and we're going to enjoy the fight. And good luck to you.
All right. Thanks, Bob.
All right, man. Take care.
I don't know how y'all gonna go hard on my night, man. It's like that. Y'all be fucked up. There ain't no damn two reason, man. I ain't like I've been trying to struggle to make weight. I've been eating
them. Dave, you gotta mute him. I don't think he's hung up his phone yet. I think Dave's disappeared as well.
They weren't eating that hard, man. We're just trying to be real.
And it's hilarious. Okay, well, I think Gabriel, I think he dropped off here really quick, so he should be calling back in. End of the show, man. But I'm really pumped up about this fight now. I got to definitely say, man, this is a, you know, what Tim Coleman's saying here on Leaving the Ring is we're not going to see a boxing match. We're definitely going to see a street fight between these two guys. So, I'm
back?
Pumped up about it. Yeah, you're back.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think he was hanging up his phone, so I just hung up. I didn't want him to say anything that he didn't want on the radio. I think he pretty much said it all.
Yeah. I thought you were saying that Dave patched him in because I was like, he did. I didn't see that. You know. Hey, let's patch him to my fest. Well, you
I'm
go ahead
I'm
and
get host
right.
The people while you do that.
Cool. Okay, let me pass in some fight fans that have been on hold waiting to speak to us here. Leon wants to talk about Bertel's next fight. What's up, brother? You're on live right now on Leaving in the Ring.
Hey, what's going on, man? How you doing?
Good, brother. How you doing, man?
I'm pretty good, man. Pretty good. I heard that the Bertel's going to be fighting that fighter from the UK, I believe, or whatever, for the belt, the one that was calling him out before he lost. And I'm wondering if you feel like that's a soft touch or... You know, is Al Haymon, you know, got him in his diapers, kind of baby walking him, or you know, or if you think that's a good shot for me at this point, or do you think he should be going right back with someone in the top five?
I mean, if he wanted to win the fans and not be judged the way he's been judged in the past, you know, which is that he's always getting the Freddie Hernandez, he's getting the big 1.4 million fights, and that Al Haymon is basically putting him in the stroller and stowing him around to the HBO offices, he should fight a little bit tougher in oppositions, but. Coming off of that loss with Victor Ortiz, I think it took a mega blow to him. I mean, because you got to think, you know, Victor been knocked out by – he was knocked down, what, three times with Madonna. He quit with Madonna. He was a guy that came up from 140. He was really just judged out because of his character with Berto. Berto, a lot of fans were really looking for Berto to be the victorious guy and really kind of let fight fans know that he's a legitimate – WBC champion, you know. But going back to what happened, I think that took a blow. And I think what HBO and Al Haymon are looking at is that they got to rebuild back this guy's confidence, because it was really one of the better fights, and also it's been geared up and talked about as to be as fight of the year for 2011. So is it a soft touch? Of course it's a soft touch. But a soft touch into what? Into building back his ego and building back his confidence? I think so. A lot of times when you see a guy get into a tough fight or get knocked out, you normally see him kind of come back with a weak fight. But this one here, it's preference. I mean, what do you think and how do you like it? Me personally, I think if Berto wants to make a statement, great. If Berto wants to make a statement, he should have came back with a statement with somebody else. You know what I mean? But there's not a whole lot of people in 147 at the poll that's trying to pick through. So he's kind of up against the wall, in my opinion, Leon. I don't know. You know, what do you think?
Yeah. And I'm wondering, I mean, because it feels like to me, I mean, because I was one of Berto's biggest supporters, man. I was watching Berto back when he was on, you know, back when he was just a turning pro. I mean, me and like 10 other of my friends, man, we were watching Berto from day one. I knew he was going to be a star. But it seems like all the soft touches they gave him kind of stunted his growth to a certain extent. Then when he got in there with a real, you know, a real fighter, he didn't know what to do. I mean, he said that he wasn't himself that night. Of course he wasn't himself. Because you're getting all these soft touches, when you're getting there with a real true warrior, you don't know how to act. So,
exactly.
I mean, I'm wondering if that stunted his growth or, I mean, and if they're going to put him in with another somewhat tomato can, that's not really helping him in the long run. What do you think?
Absolutely.
It wasn't that he wasn't himself. It was that the other guy wasn't a soft touch anymore. That was the problem.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. No, I definitely agree with you, you know, and I agree with Gabe was saying too as well, you know, and you know what, I haven't tried, I want to try, because I do want to speak to Berto. I heard that he's over here in the Bay Area working with Victor Conte, and he's at the Undisputed gym, so I definitely want to have a chance to go out there and talk to him and see where their mind frame's at and see what they're trying to do, because I got to tell you, man, I'm not really pumped up about seeing him get in with that with the fighter that he's supposed to be facing. And it's still, again, it's still leaving us a lot of questions where do we really start taking him serious anymore as a fighter? You know what I mean? I mean,
exactly.
did we hype him up so much that he's now believes he's that hype? I don't know. Gabe, what do you think?
It is what it is. They're just trying to get Berto a belt, and they're going to put him in with a foreigner, and it'll probably be good because both guys are kind of limited. You know, Berto's never really in boring fights, so we can at least say that. But,
right.
You know, John Zavick, I mean, you've never heard of him now. Well, you know, there's probably a reason for that. You know,
exactly.
And he's got a belt. So we got Josecito Lopez on the line here. He's waiting patiently for us. Like to get to
him.
Thanks,
Leon.
We're running out of time.
Thanks for calling him,
brother. All right. Talk to you guys later.
So here we are with the other half. We had Jesse Vargas earlier. And now we have Josecito Lopez, junior welterweight contender, who on September 17th in Vegas is going to open up the big Star Power show on the Golden Boy undercard against Jesse Vargas. Welcome to the show, Josecito Lopez.
Bob, thank you for having me, man. Pleasure to be back on the show.
What's up, brother? How you doing, man? Go ahead, Gabe.
Josecito and I had a chance to talk yesterday, so Dave, I want to pass it on to my co-host here, David Duenas, and let him open up and ask some questions with Lopez.
Hey, Josecito, first off, brother, thank you for coming on. Big fan, you know, and you know what I liked what you said in that press conference is that, and this would pump me up. I mean, first off, when the fight was announced, I was like, oh, hell yeah, you know, and I seen that on Henry Ramirez's Facebook. But when you said this is a fight of who survives, you know, because I really honestly believe that. I think this is a fight of who really survives and who brings what to the table. Overall, what I was telling Gabriel earlier was that a lot of people underestimate you. And my feelings and my thought is this is because they look at your KO ratio and they go like, okay, this guy's not a big puncher. But when I saw you at your gym, I literally was kind of thrown back and I said, whoa, this guy's big. He's a big dude. And this is why he's able to oppose his you know, that style that you have, which is come forward and throw a lot of punches. But when I want to go back with that phrase you said, this is a fight where we find out who survives. What do you mean by that? What were you thinking at that time when you said that phrase?
You know what? What it is I've been tested. Come a little short on a few tests, and you know, I've overcome a few tests. You know, and I don't think Jesse Vargas has quite been tested. You know, so pretty much the test is for Vargas. We're gonna see, and people know my style. I'm sure Jesse Vargas knows my style, and he knows what he's in for, and I know what he's in for. So we're. What we got to see is what he can do when he's in there with a top-notch fighter
like me.
Now you're absolutely right, man. You've been tested. You know, there's no question about that. You're a tested fighter. You know, you've been in there. You've been undermined by people. People have said, you know what? I'm sorry, I just lost my train of thought because I was reading something here, Jose. But, you know, people said, hey, look, he can't do this. He can't pull. I remember the Mike Dallas. You know, a lot of people were telling me that I was crazy that I was picking you to win that fight. Now, but when it comes to stage, when it comes to stage and it comes to the public eye and the public view, this is a pretty big event for the both of you guys, okay? So my question to you, Jose, is do you change your style to make sure you secure a win, or do you continue being Mr. Lopez, the one that us hardcore fight fans have fallen in love with, and take the fight to Vargas? Because that's what fight fans want to watch. That's what fight fans want to see. And the casual fans who haven't had a chance to see you guys grace the ring, to see these you guys that are real blue-collar and come forward and come to fight type of Mexican fighters, they're going to have a chance to witness with boxing why boxing heads are so always in a hoot about.
Yeah, you know what? You know, we obviously every fighter, we have a different game plan for every fighter. You know, we're not fighting the same exact fight as you know we did, for example, my last fight, Mike Dallas. You know, but you know, there's certain similarities in certain fighters that we hit. But at the end of the day, I'm Josecito Lopez, and you know, I have a come forward style. So you know, there's so many game plans you can have for different fighters, and you know, we're coming in with several different game plans, and whatever obviously works with us for our advantage, you know, that's what we're gonna do, you know. And Vargas is a good fighter, so we're coming in with everything, so we're ready to expect anything from Vargas.
Now you're facing off, you're looking at each other, cameras, you know, are flashing away, and everybody's basically having their eyes on the both of you guys. What was the mind frame? You know, Gable had a chance to ask Vargas, were you sizing him up? Were you sizing him up? Were you looking at him and seeing, okay, what does this guy bring?
Yeah, you know what? It's a game plan. You know, it's part of the game. You know, you always you gotta see what the other fighter has. You know, you gotta read the fighter. You know, I've been in there for several years now, so I kind of know, you know, my train of thought going into a fight. You know, but hey, I know he's coming with his best, and I'm coming with my best, so I'm excited to watch the fight after my fight, you know. So this is a great fight, man. I'm excited for it, and I can't wait to get in there.
Man, I can't wait, Gabriel.
I can't wait to see this fight, dude. Yeah, it's like, it can't be September, like, soon enough. Have you broken down tape? Do you guys usually do that? Do you watch tape of fighters and see what the weaknesses are? Seems like, you know, the Christian Pavella fight for me with him was very telling. I mean,
he
kind of got exposed, and some people even didn't think that Vargas won that fight. You know, did you see it? What were your thoughts about it?
You know, we've only got to see a couple videos of it, and, you know, actually that one's not one of them yet, but we will actually, we're supposed to be receiving that video later on this week. Hey, that's part of our homework, you know. We watch tapes, we see weaknesses, we see strengths from him, and we do our homework. Well, this is my career, this is what I do. So, you know, I've been in here for a while, I know what to expect, you know, and I'm expecting the best Vargas. You know, I'm expecting the Vargas that most people think the Vargas is, a great fighter. You know, a lot of people think he's a great fighter, so I'm expecting a great fighter. So I'm going to come with my best, and we're going to give a hell of a fight come September 17th.
Do you think
the underdog in this fight?
Mm.
You know what? That's a tough question. You know, I see a lot of real boxing fans that, hey, it's you know, a lot of them say, hey, you know what, I'm going to destroy this guy. A lot of them say that Jesse Vargas is going to destroy me. You know, I don't know, you know, but I know I'm coming, and I'm coming to win, and I'm going to win September 17th.
Hey, really quick, Ernesto, who does the boxing lab, you know, good friend, Everlast, I know, you know, Ernesto Gabillon, he's asking, he needs your colors.
Oh, Ernesto, man, that's my boy, man. I thank Everlast and Ernesto for being behind me, and he's a good guy, man. I'll have my color set to him.
Now, you know, Osecito, I gotta ask you: do you ever need like some type of animosity or anything behind to kind of bring the fight, you know, to the other guy? I mean, with Jesse Vargas here, who's been respectable, but too is being confident, and he's saying, look, he was on the show just earlier in the beginning of the show, and he said, I'm not the underdog, he's the underdog. You know, so do you need anything to be added to come at Jesse Vargas, or is this just going to stay as gentleman as it's going to get until fight night?
You know, like people have asked me and told me before, you know, hey, why don't you talk shit? That's not the type of fighter I am, you know. It would feel very awkward and weird to get in there and try to, you know, cuss this guy out or try to intimidate him. No, I do my talking in the ring, and I think that proves it. I don't need to do that, you know. So it really doesn't make a difference. I think the motivation of the size of the event and the fight period, you know, that's big enough motivation for me, and I really don't need anything else. So. Hey, I'm excited, man. I can't wait.
Now, when you
on Chris all this time, it would have rubbed off somehow, you know.
I know. Even Henry, you know, Henry's known to, you know, to talk a little a smack on, you know, once in a while.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
how are you eating? How are you with pizza and beer? Maybe that's rubbed off in that way.
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
I said, how are you with pizza and beer? Maybe the areola influence is rubbed off that way.
Oh, no, man. You know, camp's been going great. You know, I'm more focused than ever, you know, so everything's good. But, you know, September 17th, you know, I think we have a tough fight. And I said this to a few people. I know September 17th I have a tough fight against Jesse Vargas, but in my opinion, I think Jesse Vargas has a tougher fight than I do, so we got to see September 17th.
You know,
do you
get tired of hearing people say, this guy has no pop, this is why he's not going to win the fight?
You know what, I hear good things and bad things. You know what, hey, at the end of the day, I'm the only one in the ring, and I know what I have, and I know what I can do, and if I got to keep on doing it, then I'll keep on doing it. If I got to prove, I'll prove it, you know. But all I got to prove it to myself. That's all. There's always going to be people that talk bad or see the negative things and see the bad things in the fighter, you know. So, no, it doesn't bother me much, you know. It's people talk, and they're critics and they're fans, and that's what they do. That's what they do. So it's no biggie.
Yep, that's something a lot of people do, man. Hey, Osecito, man, I appreciate you coming on, bro. I'm excited about this fight. I can't thank the both of you guys enough for signing on to fight each other. It's just, everything that's always said bad about boxing, it's always just one fight that always makes us go, see, this is why we watch boxing. This is why we love the sport, you know. And it's justice due, man, for you guys to get the exposure that you guys do, need and should get, because you guys are really the core of why boxing fans come to sit down and have a beer and root for a fighter, man. So I just want to applaud and say our appreciation, you know, for you guys doing this on September 17th.
Oh, thank you. No problem, man. This is what I do. This is what I live for, man. I love being in a position, you know, like this. And I think I've earned my position where I'm at right now to be, get a shot at an HBO pay-per-view, even if it's an opener, you know. But, hey, this will only open doors, you know. So I'm excited. September 17th. Don't miss it. 6 p.m.
Is this Riverside versus – let me ask you this. Is this Riverside versus Las Vegas?
Yeah, I guess so. Yep, I'm representing Riverside, and he's from Las Vegas, so we got to bring everything we got to Vegas.
So what do you say to the Riverside fans, man? They definitely got to go and get a ticket, right? They got to show some support.
Oh, yeah. I got my people going over there without tickets, so I'm definitely not lacking support, man. I got everybody. I got Riverside behind me, so, hey, we're ready.
Absolutely, brother. Thank you again, man, for calling in.
Thanks to you guys, man. Always a pleasure to be with you guys.
All right, man. Take care.
All right, thank you, guys.
There you go. Josecito Lopez, man, is going to be facing Jesse Vargas. Great two great young Mexican kids, Mexican-American kids are going to be stepping in the ring and leaving it in the ring. You know, this is a fight you cannot pass on. Trust me. You got to be there either live or you got to watch it on the telly. Hey, we're at the end of the ropes of our show here. It's always a great pleasure. I always have fun with, you know, my co-host Gabriel Montoya and our producer David Chen. Shouts out to everybody that follow us on Twitter and Facebook and goes to the website of Leaving the Ring. Once again, next week we'll be back on, and don't forget to check out Noche de Boxeo and the Boxing Lab, man. Those are our partners, and those are the guys as well that put in a lot of work to bring boxing through the airwaves to your ears.
And one last thing, Francisco Salazar on Fight News is reporting that if you're in the Oxnard area on Friday, Saturday night, 7 to 9 p.m. at the El Dorado Mexican Restaurant, both nights. On Friday, Brandon Rios will be there for a couple hours. And on Saturday, Sergio Martinez will be there from 4 to 6. I think Brandon's going to be there 7 to 9. They're going to be meeting people, signing autographs. So if you want to meet those guys, get on out there and check them out for the grand reopening of that restaurant. Dave,
it's
always a pleasure. We had a million guests, and we've just made it under the wire.
yeah.
I'll give you a call after the Coleman fight.
All right, brother. I'll talk to you guys later, man. You guys take care.
All right.
Good night.